Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Joint Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization this Wednesday, June the 7th, 2017. We have, once again, a robust list of witnesses this evening, so we're going to jump right in. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2017 and invite our first panel of our esteemed colleagues up this evening. I believe Senator DeBoer and Representative Evans are here to testify. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, co-chairs, colleagues. I'll jump right into it, too. I know you have a long night, and I have a tax reform meeting in just a few minutes, so I'd like to provide testimony on the proposed transportation package. I applaud the time and
I'm sorry,
energy.
Senator, for the record, your name, please.
Alan DeBoer.
Thank you.
Senator from District 3, which is Medford, Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, and Jacksonville.
Thank you.
So I'd like to provide testimony on the proposed transportation package. I applaud the time and energy that so many of you have spent addressing our many diverse needs. I will be very specific on the proposed 1-2% excise tax on new vehicles, or the version that has 0.75% on new and used. As you are aware, I'm an auto dealer and past president of the Oregon Automobile Dealers Association. However, I'm also concerned about targeting a specific industry. The whole definition of an excise tax is that it's a sales tax that cannot be directly passed on to the consumer. I have trouble explaining that we cannot pass it on to the consumer. We are a highly competitive industry with a window sticker on every new vehicle and a very low markup from the manufacturer, operate at a profit margin of 1.5-3% of gross sales. Every business will always strive for maximum income. This allows higher pay and benefits for employees, the cost of infrastructure, and debt reduction. If we add a tax, we have two choices: increase revenue, which we do every day to maximize revenue, or decrease expenses. I'll deviate from my script a little bit and give you an example. I have a young woman that graduated from Rogue Community College that's a mechanic at our store. She just had her second baby about 2 years ago. We try to provide with our employees as much pay as we can safely do and retain profit for necessary business expenses in return on investment. So she's the perfect example. We have a share of our net profit that goes to employees. I've done a first-time home buyer program for my employees for the last 20 years, which has allowed them to purchase their first homes. When you say that we get a tax, I have to reduce expenses, and these are the things I don't want to do. So I'll offer several suggestions. First, make it only on new vehicles. The move to make it on new and used probably doesn't work. There's 218 new vehicle dealers in Oregon and almost 2,700 used car dealers. Mostly they're small businesses that struggle to meet all the regulations and special programs that they have to do. And I don't know if they have the accounting and the ability. Some of them are small, one-person, two-person organizations. It is much easier for a franchise dealer to handle regulations than it is for a used vehicle dealer. My second suggestion is to change it to a sales tax or a registration fee that is done through DMV. That easily passes it on to the consumer, who will ultimately pay. This could make it easier to collect from out-of-state dealers. We should not give them a $200 to $600 advantage to sell in Oregon over our own businesses. The DMV is the best way to deal with that. I don't know how we collect from an out-of-state dealer in Vancouver, and dealers in Idaho are our main competitors that sell a lot of cars in Oregon. So if you put it on the DMV, then anybody registering a car in Oregon, which, by the way, is a very cheap thing to do compared to other states around us, I just bought a new car in California. It was $42,000. I paid $4,400 in DMV fees, which included the sales tax. The third is that this package has become so complicated it may not pass. I hope we have a simplified backup bill to increase the fuel tax, and if we're able to, a registration fee increase on plug-in vehicles to provide a fair share for road usage. Our counties, cities, and states have road and bridges that need maintenance to lower vehicle miles traveled, which helps our CO2 emissions. So I'm hopeful that we have a backup plan, which I would like to see just keep it simple, increase the fuel tax and the small registration. So with that, thank you for the opportunity and all the hard work. And I realize, as a participant, the stress level that's coming up and the necessary things we have to do for Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I'd like to invite Senator Dembro up. Would you like to speak this evening, Senator?
Sure.
Please come and join us. Yes. Thank you, Senator. Representative Evans.
Thank you, Co-Chair McEwen, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Evans. I represent House District 20, which is Monmouth Independence, West Salem, parts of South Salem. I'm really here tonight to speak to three things. I'll make it very brief. The first is to say thank you for doing this task. It's not, and I assume it is like trying to put Jell-O on the wall. You're moving parts, and you're trying to find the best that you can. I just want you to know that I appreciate the package that's currently being considered. I know it did not come by accident. It was the result of hard work. The second is I want to affirm the priorities of the city of Salem that actually sent a letter, I believe, today. With the first one, Salem and its significant issues related to deferred transportation maintenance, I want to emphasize that. And the third part is actually asking for help on doing something related to deferred transportation maintenance. Tonight I'm here to ask for one thing in the transportation package that is currently in it, but I'm asking for an adjustment in terms of where it is in terms of our priorities. Right now, we have two bridges that span the Willamette River in Salem, the Center Street Bridge, the Marion Street Bridge. Neither of those bridges are in great condition given our likelihood of a seismic event in the near future. Your goals from the framework, protecting Oregon's investment in its existing bridges, streets, roads, and highways, and preparing the transportation system for a Cascadia zone earthquake, were tailor-made for at least one of the bridges to be upgraded. I would hope that it would be the Center Street Bridge. I'm told that's in the better condition. It would be the cheaper rehabilitation and retrofitting bridge to do. But right now, we have a capital city that, when a catastrophic event occurs, will have a very unfortunate circumstance of not only being challenged in trying to help the rest of the state respond, but we would have 24,000 people plus on the west side unable to get to the hospital they can see from the riverbank. We don't have a reliable, seismically upgraded transportation and passageway, and that's what I'm asking for as you put the package, the final trimmings on the package together. There are a lot of worthy projects, but that's the one thing that, if I could ask, I ask you to consider.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Welcome, Senator Dembro.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm Michael Dembro. I represent Senate District 23. That's northeast and southeast Portland. Today I'm here just speaking on behalf of some of my colleagues from the Portland metro area, thanking you for including in your considerations here the needs of transit and a commitment to making transit improvements part of this package. As you know, it is extremely important for many people, especially low-income people, who really rely on public transit as a way to get around. And a group of us sent a letter to you a little while back, and let me just read from a paragraph. I know there's some concern because the proposal here envisions a new small tax on employee wages, which is a first for funding transit, to have an employee side of the payroll tax. But you know, I'm really encourage you for having done this. We do obviously need to consider the impact on low impact on low wage workers, the impact on low wage workers, and therefore, in the letter that we sent you, we asked you to encourage districts like TriMet to include a low fare, a lower low income fare as part of their program. So we strongly recommend the committee secure a commitment from TriMet that if an employee's side payroll tax is implemented as part of the package, the agency will use a portion of the funds to implement a low-income fare. We need to make TriMet more accessible to low-income residents, and this funding stream makes sense as a way of making a low-income fare a reality. And in conversations with TriMet, I will say they are committed to doing this if the transportation package goes through and they're able to get the funds that they need. And we'll work with, they have been working with a group of community people to set a fare and to implement it appropriately. So, colleagues, thank you for including transit as part of the plan. Please stick with it and make sure that TriMet comes through on their commitment. I'm sure that they will. But, of course, you have to give them the funds to do that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, we're going to move. That's all the legislators, I think. We'll move to the list then. We're going to ask people to come up in groups of three. And the first three are Daryl Fuller, Greg Remensburg, and Tim Ernest. And ask you to keep try to keep your comments to 2 minutes. Welcome, gentlemen.
Chairman, co-chairs, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller here on behalf of the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association. I first started my career lobbying on behalf of auto dealers in 1997. In the 20 years since then, I've represented all three of the auto dealer associations in Oregon at one time or another. And in those 20 years, I've never opposed the transportation funding package before because we support more roads and we support better roads. That 20-year streak ends today, and the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association opposes this package, but not all of it. I did a little bit of looking. There are 8,917 lines of text in this 298-page bill. The good news is I only opposed 35 lines, which means I support 8,882 lines of the bill. So you can earn our support by simply deleting sections 90 and 91, which are the excise and privilege tax on the sale of motor vehicles in Oregon. We believe that's a poison pill in the bill, and we don't support the creation of those new taxes, and although we understand why the committee has created them. If the bill goes forward with those two sections, there are some problems with the way that those two sections are crafted, and I've submitted some information to OLIS and hope for an opportunity to continue that conversation. I'll just point out two things briefly in my testimony because of the time limitations. One is the tax includes ATVs. These are off-road vehicles like quads that don't use the public roads or highways. So I don't understand why we'd have a sales tax for the roads on something that isn't used on the roads. So it would seem to me that you would want to exempt vehicles that aren't using our transportation system from an excise or a privilege tax, but they are included in the definition of vehicles for the purpose of selling. The other that concerns us is that the calculation of the tax is done prior to the calculation of a traded-in vehicle. So if I'm trading in a $5,000 vehicle in exchange for purchasing a $10,000 vehicle, I'm spending $5,000, but you're taxing me on $10,000. And I believe that if you're going to create a calculation of a sales tax on the purchase price of a vehicle, the way the current bill is in the Dash 3 amendments, the only thing you exempt from the calculation is any fees or taxes that you've paid on the vehicle, but it doesn't include your traded-in vehicle. And I believe it's important that we include the traded-in vehicle prior to the calculation of the tax. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. I encourage you to look at my riveting testimony on OLIS when it appears. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Daryl.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Tim Ernest. I'm the current OADA president. I'm a car dealer in the Dalles, Oregon. And we are opposed to an excise tax on automobiles. While we understand and support the need to address our transportation infrastructure, we feel strongly that the proposed excise tax would put Oregon car dealers at a disadvantage with surrounding states. A vehicle purchased at a dealership in Oregon by an out-of-state consumer would have that fee built into the sale price of the vehicle as well as at the time of registration in their state. To give an example, in my personal experience has been many of my clients are Washington farmers. They purchase $50,000 to $60,000 trucks who for a $600 approximate savings and not paying the inflated sales price and Washington sales tax will go purchase a vehicle elsewhere. That's a significant savings. The competitions between Portland and Vancouver, as well as the Gorge versus the Tri-Cities, are very competitive. Add to that the Oregon marketing efforts of Dave Smith dealerships in Kellogg, Idaho, and we are incentivizing consumers to shop in neighboring states. Every other state charges a fee during the registration process, thus collecting on all sales. If this was a sales tax or a registration fee, it would be different, but this is an excise tax on the dealer and operates like a gross receipts tax. Typical margins for a new car dealer average 1.5%. This excise tax would require us to forfeit half of our profit margin, rendering us non-competitive for out-of-state buyers. A large percent of my clients are out-of-state, approximately 30%. The new car dealerships in the state of Oregon, I represent 218 of them. They provide a living wage job for 27,000 people and represent 17.9% of Oregon's total retail business. This would be a particularly onerous excise tax to apply. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer and committee members, appreciate the time. My name is Greg Remitzberger. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. Got the pleasure of working with people like Tim, who are small businesses all throughout the state of Oregon. I like to say the correlation of coverage across the state is only matched by school districts, because we've got someone in literally every town and burb throughout the state. This is, again, something that we feel is onerous to our industry specific. As Senator DeBoer pointed out, there are three things that I'm concerned with. One, the competitive disadvantage that Tim mentioned. Two, how the money is collected, which is going to be difficult at best to collect from out-of-state people. And then how the money is handled once it's collected. The out-of-state people who buy in Oregon, we would have to build in that excise tax into our price. So again, we either have a price disadvantage with the dealers outside of the state, or if we are able to make the sale, they pay for the fee here built into the price, and then when they go to register their vehicle, because it's handled at the time of their sales tax is handled at the time of registration in their state, they would be paying it again. So there's a double incentive for them to buy outside of Oregon. For an Oregon resident that were to buy from a Washington dealership or a Idaho dealership, for that dealership out of state to collect the money and pay it back into Oregon is going to be nearly impossible to collect. So again, I think there's an advantage that they will take advantage of marketing into our state to take business away from us. The third thing is how the money is handled. This goes to great lengths to take the money out of the Highway Trust Fund. The legislature many years ago said that any transportation-related fees needs to go to the Highway Trust Fund that maintains transportation needs for our roads and highways and maintenance. This going into the general fund, although it's intended right now for transportation and transit efforts, future legislators could decide to spend this money elsewhere, and that's a great concern to us. We think transportation funds need to remain in the hands of the Transportation Highway Trust Fund. Thank you.
Thank you.
And has everyone had a chance to speak? Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here tonight. Next up, we have Alan Pollack, Tim Frew, and Chris, I believe, Carpenter. And after that, we'll call it on deck Jeffrey Cossack, John Bartholomew, and Nicole Mickleberry. Welcome, sir. How are you this evening?
Great, thank you. Good evening. Chair McEwen, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House Bill 2017. I'm Alan Pollack. I'm the general manager for Salem Kaiser Transit. Last night, our board president, Bob Krebs, testified on the impact what this community would see if this bill were passed. Tonight, I'd like to follow up and talk about some of the demographics of those we serve and try to address some of the comments about regressivity in the package. Our goal of reducing the impact to low-income and vulnerable populations led to a payroll tax component that keeps the weekly cost to minimum wage earners below 39 cents a week. We appreciated how the transit subgroup led by Senators Beyer, Senators Monroe, and Senator Taylor dove into the issue of equity as we crafted the transit component of the package. Salem Kaiser Transit serves a disproportionately high number of seniors and people with disabilities. Without weekend and later evening service, it is incredibly difficult for people to access jobs, doctor's appointments, or other vital appointments that people need to attend to. What we are saying in our community is that if you are transit dependent, it is difficult to work in the restaurant industry, the service sector economy, participate in family events on the weekend, take weekend classes at our community college, or even attend church. Some other important demographics, just to give you a snapshot of what we are facing here, 58% of our current riders do not have access to a vehicle. 35% of our riders are students, and 83% of those students that are college students attend our community college. 40% of our riders are non-white and minority populations, and over 25% live in households where language or where a language other than English is the primary spoken language. One other major component of addressing equity and regressivity is protecting families and individuals with no income and senior populations without a paycheck from the payroll tax component. These populations are critically dependent on transit for independence, choice, and dignity. Our goal at Salem Kaiser Transit, and I would suggest other transit districts throughout the state, is to enhance service to our vulnerable populations that we serve. I would just close by saying it has been 441 Saturdays where the vulnerable populations and the transit-dependent people who live in the Salem-Kaiser community have had access to their community on weekends. This bill could stop that number before it hits 500. And with that, I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, sir. Senator Johnson.
I'm sorry. Maybe it's the lateness of the day, and maybe it's my slowness. Are you testifying in support of the modest 39-cent
Yes,
employee
I am.
Tax.
Chair McEwen, Chair Beyer, Senator Johnson,
I am
supporting.
I just got a little lost in the testimony.
Happy to make that clear.
Thank you for the clarification, sir.
Thank you.
Chair McEwen, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Tim Frew. I am the Executive Secretary of the Oregon State Building Trades, and I represent 30,000 construction workers and 21 member unions that are highly skilled in a wide array of crafts. For our members, this is about a lot more than additional construction work here in our region. In fact, for most of our members, a transportation package is much more about improving their quality of life. Each year, Oregon workers are spending more and more time stuck in traffic. That's more time away from their families, more time away from their friends, and more time they don't have available to serve others in their community. Oregon desperately needs to make new investments in its transportation system, which is why the Oregon State Building Trade supports your proposal to significantly increase funding for the local transportation infrastructure. I encourage you to think about what it means for a building trades worker who is working 5-10-hour days at Intel, but who also has to spend 2 more hours each day commuting to and from. Do the math and think about the lost time wasted, that congestion is added. Don't get me wrong, the much-needed spending for transportation projects throughout our state will also create local jobs that add to Oregon's economy in a very significant way. The additional income that it puts in the pockets of Oregon workers will also mean additional revenue for other vital services like school, public safety, and human services. These investments will also create important new career opportunities for men and women seeking work in skilled trades that provide living wages and exceptional training through local apprenticeship programs. Most of all, it means jobs that provide people with good benefits like health care, employer-paid medical insurance, and other fringe benefits that improve their quality of life. The time is now for the legislature to dedicate much-needed resources to infrastructure improvements that will benefit tradesmen and tradeswomen across our state. Please support the transportation funding package before you. On behalf of the Oregon State Building Trades, I want to applaud you for your hard work in the transportation package.
Thank you, Mr. Frew, and that was perfect timing. You were down to second zero. I appreciate you being very concise. Welcome, sir.
Chair McCune, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Carpenter. I'm with the Oregon and Southern Idaho District Council of Laborers. We're here in strong support of the proposal, the proposed transportation package. Largely, we echo what Mr. Frew just laid out. We represent about 3,500 construction workers in the state of Oregon. They do things in regards to this project like asphalt, minor welding, flagging, road and bridge repair. We also have about 200 apprentices, coming up on 200. We're always looking to increase that number, but we cannot increase our apprentices unless we have stable work to offer them. One of the reasons that we very strongly support this proposal is that we believe that the way that the projects are being phased in over the next decade or so, alongside the broad base of funding options, gives us a lot of certainty in the kind of work we can promise our apprentices as they're working through their two-year program. So thank you on that. Final last piece, currently House Bill 2162 that's up on the Senate floor, looking at apprenticeship utilization, requires that on projects over $5 million, 10% of work hours in apprenticeable occupations be used or be filled by apprentices. We would love to see some sort of language mimicking that in this bill, especially on the so-called mega projects, so that we can make sure that we get our folks through their programs and up to journeyman. In any case, thank you all very much for the hours you've put into this, and the Oregon Southern Idaho Laborers District Council fully supports this proposal.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions for this panel? Seeing none, we appreciate you being here tonight. Next up, we have Jeffrey Cossack, John Bartholomew, and Noel Mickleberry, and on deck, Aaron looks like Braun, Johan Hellman, and Stephen Demarest. Please excuse me if I've mispronounced. We'll straighten it up when you get up here. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Jeff Cossack. I represent the Cement Masons Local 555, members working both in Oregon and Southwest Washington. We pour and finish concrete every day. We need this transportation package to update our outdated infrastructure. And with the influx of people moving into the Oregon, we have to find a way to relieve that congestion on our roads. Giving good people good paying jobs and generate revenue back into the state. The Cement Masons support this bill before you. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Chair McEwen, Chair Beyer, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Bartholomew. I'm the Government Relations Director for AARP Oregon with over 500,000 members across the state. And we want to thank you for the work that you've done on this proposal. And we believe it's a good start to expanding mobility and transportation options for our communities, making the streets safer for all of us, and advancing transparency and accountability in the system as well. Being able to get around easily and safely is critical for older adults to remain active, independent, and engaged members of their community. And the investment in public transit in this proposal, while still short of the growing need for transit services, will go a very long way in meeting the demand and connecting communities. It creates consistent and stable funding that will benefit both urban and rural communities and enable transit districts to increase frequency, enhanced hours, upgrade buses and facilities, and expand routes to underserved rural areas and connect communities through intercity buses. It's all well and good to have a great transit system if you can't get to the bus stop, though. And that's why we appreciate the work on the Safe Streets element of the proposal. Every 2 hours in America, a pedestrian is killed in a street or crosswalk because it's unsafe. Children, seniors, People of color, low-income individuals are disproportionately the victims in these fatalities. And we think this is a good start, but there's potential to do more. We'd like to see the projects be expanded to a mile around a school because that embraces more of the community. And I know I'm running out of time, so I'll just note that I have some further testimony on OLIS, and I appreciate the work that you've been doing, and we support the package.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Hi. Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Noelle Mickleberry, and I am the executive director of Oregon Walks. We are the state's pedestrian advocacy organization, and we work to make walking safe, convenient, and attractive for everyone. And I appreciate the opportunity to provide comment and appreciate all the work that's gone into developing this proposal. While there are critical elements of this proposal, especially investments in transit, walking, and biking that we support, there are even more concerns that we have with what type of projects are prioritized, how these projects are funded, and who stands to benefit. The current level of funding for transit, walking, and biking in this package is a bare minimum, and we urge the committee to address the following concerns within this package. First, there's no doubt that congestion is a serious concern around the state. However, roadway expansion as a congestion mitigation effort is an expensive and ineffective solution to a real problem that our communities are facing to accessing jobs, schools, and basic needs. The percentage of the overall package that's going towards meaningful congestion mitigation, which is providing people with options to get around, is extraordinarily low at about 10 to 11%. It's unclear to us how this lopsided investment strategy is leading us towards a more climate-resilient future, nor a less congested one. In addition, regressive taxation is the primary method for raising revenue in this package. We see low-income families bearing the brunt of this impact, or this funding proposal, as wage-based and flat taxes make up a larger portion of their income each month. Low-income families are also the most likely to use walking and transit as their primary mode of transportation, and right now this package disproportionately burdens those families while failing to adequately invest in the transportation that they need to meet their basic needs. And although we appreciate the intent behind the proposed efforts toward low-income mitigation requirements, we think the current bill language will miss the mark in implementation. Low-income riders who are also pedestrians need firm commitments towards making our transit system more accessible and instituting low-income fares. Losing track of my my statement.
And we'd appreciate it if you would get close to wrapping
thanks.
Up.
Yeah, thank well, you. The rest of my statement's online on OLIS as well. And thank you for the opportunity to comment. And we look forward to continuing discussion on this.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Your testimony took great pains to criticize the regressive taxation. How do you characterize the vehicle excise tax or the bike tax?
How would I characterize them?
Mm-hmm.
As you mean because they're on a certain limit? They're not regressive? Is that the question?
I'm just asking how you'd characterize them.
They're flat taxes on... I wouldn't say that they're regressive. I said that it's a primary function of the entire package is regressive taxes. I wouldn't say that those necessarily are.
How much of the package do you think relies on the excise tax?
I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Next up we have, let's see, Aaron Brown, John Hellman, and Steve Demarest. On deck, Cesar Lopez, A.J. Zalata, and Kelly Campbell, please. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Brown, and I'm a citizen from Multnomah County, testifying regarding my concerns and hopes for House Bill 2017-3 and asking the committee to affirm a commitment to a thoughtful, cost-effective investments in prosperity for the future of our state. We've seen over the past couple months the 2017 legislature grapple with so many overlapping challenges that are facing Oregonians, lack of funding for basic services, particularly health care and education, desire to see government be more accountable and transparent, multiple housing bills, talking about air quality, climate change. It would be a shame if this bill undid all of the progress that you have been putting into all of these different things. This bill overwhelmingly prioritizes investments that seem willfully oblivious to the role that transportation plays in securing Oregon's future. Not a single city in the world has solved traffic congestion through highway expansion. There is no example of more highways leading to the better outcomes and alleviating the congestion that some of the previous testifiers have spoken about. There is not a single study that demonstrates that building more of these highways will address our carbon emissions. Not a single study on public health suggesting this will make people healthier. In fact, we know we need communities where people are more able to walk, bike, and take transit for air quality reasons, for climate control, climate change reasons. This isn't about partisan politics. Rural and small-town Oregonians are equally suffering from the mobility challenges that are faced across the state, particularly senior citizens, children, low-income communities, rural communities, veterans, citizens with disabilities. If you want better education results, we need to be investing in safe routes to school, because those are the barriers that are preventing people from accessing the education investments that we are making. If we want cost containment, we need to be thinking about how much easier it is to build a sidewalk than it is to build a highway connecting a subdivision to a 24-hour fitness or someone's on a treadmill. In conclusion, there are so many community groups that have multiple ideas about ways in which our transportation investments can more directly meet the needs of our communities, and many of them have been here testifying. I implore you to continue to buckle down on finding ways to support the investments in biking, walking, safe routes to school, safety, road maintenance, and especially transit before investing more into some of these highways. When the time comes to negotiate the details, and talk to your constituents about how you made progress on the goals of what you said you'd deliver, I hope you consider the impacts that this transportation bill will have on that. Thank you tremendously for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Johan Hellman. I'm the president of the Oregon Rail Users League, known as OREL, and I'm the regional assistant vice president of government affairs for the BNSF Railway Company. I'm testifying today as a representative of OREL. We've submitted written comments, which I'll summarize now. First, we'd like to begin by thanking you for your continuing support of Connect Oregon and for expanding your support for this program, which has been an instrumental tool in building important trade infrastructure in the state and ensuring safe, efficient movement of freight around the state of Oregon. We're concerned, however, that a new provision in the program is drafted in the bill before you calls for a 50% funding match from all private companies. Although we understand this language may not reflect actual intent, it should be noted that such a discrepancy between public and private matching funds could have a chilling effect on private investment, particularly for more localized operations such as regional short-line railroads. This is a concern OREL raised in our written comments and also an issue raised individually by several of our members and the organizations they represent, including comments submitted by Paul Langner of Teven Brothers Land and Timber Company, Bruce Carr as well of the Oregon Eastern Railroad, and Ralph Saperstein of the Kuskokwim Shippers Coalition. We're also concerned that the current bill identifies specific projects for Connect Oregon and allocates as much as $60 million for these projects, leaving only a small amount for the regular program during the first biennium. This deviates from the competitive and collaborative process that has worked well for Connect Oregon over the years. It also raises important policy questions about the certainty of grant allocations going forward, as well as the stability of the program, since a decrease in the total allocation could have large impacts on the project mix. And finally, and in closing, we'll offer two observations. First, that it may be time to consider lifting the prohibitions on allowing the railroad in Senate District 9 to compete for Connect Oregon funds. Whether or not this ban made sense at the time of enactment, we would respectfully submit that time has passed and would strongly encourage the committee to consider lifting this prohibition. Second, completely separate from Connect Oregon, we would respectfully submit that passenger rail is a growing need, particularly in the state of Oregon, which has traditionally faced headwinds in funding. So we would support and encourage additional individual investments, specifically in the area of passenger rail. Thank you again for your consideration, for the opportunity to share our thoughts and concerns. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
So if memory serves me correctly, rail got a huge percentage of the last Connect Oregon. So by chilling effect, do you mean that the railroads won't ask the state for money if the match goes to 50%?
I think that it can have a disincentive in projects that may be potentially on the bubble or that might be further down on the list of prioritization. So I don't know that you'll ever see a situation where there won't be need or interest in economic development, particularly in rural areas. But I think that it can be a disincentive, particularly against other regions or other states that might compete more aggressively for those private infrastructure investment funds that might be otherwise come.
Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Chair McEwen, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stephen Demarest. I am president of SAU Local 503. We represent 55,000 workers in the state of Oregon. That includes the hardworking women and men who work at ODOT, and it also includes hardworking home care workers and many others. First off, I want to say that we appreciate and respect all the work that's been put into this transportation package. Oregon needs repair and improvement of its transportation infrastructure. The members of SEU 503 believe that a robust infrastructure package is good for the economy and good for all of us. We particularly like the part of the bill that focuses on public transit, which we think is critical for working families who need options when they don't want or can't afford a car. A robust public transit system is important because many workers do not have traditional schedules and need to have access to transit at off-peak times. I'm going to talk this evening about how we believe that the transportation package and the revenue package are inherently linked. We believe that we have time in this session to solve both the challenges facing our infrastructure system and the 25-year challenge our state has faced to fund schools and essential services. We believe it would be a mistake to leave this session solving one problem and leaving the other for another day and another session. These issues are directly linked for our members, and in fact, for all low and middle-income families in Oregon. The transportation package would tax workers, drivers, and car owners. At the same time, the current budget would, for example, cut the hours for home care workers that care for seniors and people with disabilities, meaning many will face decreases in their pay. Among low-income workers, home care workers disproportionately own cars in order to get to their clients and all the places those clients live throughout Oregon, and in many cases, in order to drive those clients to doctor appointments. Many of these workers make between $12,000 and $25,000 a year. If the cuts to their hours they are facing occur, they will not be able to afford the proposed increase in the registration fees. They will be priced out of providing services to their clients who are also Oregon's clients. So without a revenue package that funds services like in-home care, the transportation package poses a real challenge of affordability for low-income families. Meanwhile, there have been lots of conversations in the Joint Revenue Committee about how to make sure a corporate activities tax is not regressive. One of the ideas has been to provide a small income tax break for families to offset any potential cost increases. We believe that the income tax breaks that are proposed in the CAT would also help families pay for the increases in the transportation package. On its own, without relief from tax breaks, the transportation package will hit low-income families hard. And I appreciate your patience. I see I've gone out of time, so I'll stop there.
Thank you. If you have written testimony, sir, please feel free to
I will do. Thank
and
you.
It will be on all this for everybody to take a look at. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Senator Johnson.
I guess for SEIU, the question that I've got is, you testified as to some of the merits of the transportation package. Is SEIU really willing to sacrifice the transportation package?
Sacrifice for?
If revenue doesn't materialize?
We believe they have to go together, yes.
So yes is the answer.
We don't believe the transportation package could go through without revenue reform.
Okay. Follow up. I wasn't going to speak, but
Senator
I sit on both committees. Let me make it. Is the press here? I want to make sure the press is here. You're trying to play political blackmail. That's what you're trying to do. And I sit on both committees. If you want to generate no votes across the board, you can continue this crap. Do you understand me? Because what you're doing is throwing rural Oregonians under the bus. And you take it back to your union members, and you tell them to decide. They come to the table and negotiate and work, or they get out. Is that clear?
You're clear. May I respond?
Yes, you may.
We're not here to blackmail or play gay. We're here to protect and advocate for working Oregonians, and in particular, middle and low-income Oregonians. So the idea that workers who and individual taxpayers who are currently paying more than their fair share to increase that burden even greater is not acceptable. We want a transportation package, as I said, as I testified. We need a transportation package. But we can't do it on the backs of working Oregonians.
And I fully agree with you. But what you're proposing is one or the other or none. And so if you want to play political blackmail games, let's make sure it's all over every newspaper in the entire state. Let's make sure of that. Because I am one of the individuals that has to put this thing together on both sides. And your union is not helping. Your union is hurting. Let's be very clear. I don't think your union would disagree. I am one of the key people in both of these positions. And you're hurting me. You're hurting our efforts to try and do something. And no, I'm not interested in listening to you anymore.
Further questions? Representative McClain.
I just want to be clear that I appreciate what the senator said to you, that this makes it very difficult. But I heard you say that you were in favor of a revenue package and that you were in favor of a transportation package. Is that what I heard?
That's correct.
Okay, so you are in favor of both.
Yes.
And you appreciate the transit that's in this package. Is there anything else you appreciate?
As a union president? Well, as a union president, I appreciate the package overall, as I indicated, because we need infrastructure repair and improvement. As a personal note, I'm a cyclist, and I appreciate the fact that there is the sales tax on bikes is ameliorated by the types of bikes and the price of the bikes that's going to apply to, and that the fact that there's going to be money for bike infrastructure, if I could throw that in.
Vice Chair Benz.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So I also sit on both committees, and it's hard for me not to think that your opposition or your position is not based on the best of facts. If you would go look at the presentation that we heard in the Revenue Reform Committee, I think just yesterday, you'll find that the folks at the low income end of the proposed income tax rebate scale actually have to pay more under the proposed gross receipts tax. The folks under $20,000 actually end up paying more under that which you are saying is a condition of your support of this particular package. If you look at the next two layers of folks, up the next $20,000 from $20,000 to $40,000 and on up, they get the merest fraction of a benefit by virtue of the tax break they're given. I just want to point out also, if you turn it back to this particular committee and look at the huge amount of benefits that accrue to low-income people, for example, the transit piece, $107 million a year, that is in large part focused on the folks that don't have cars. Now, I admit, this package does impose upon folks making minimum wage the cost of 39 cents a week. 39 cents a week for a person on minimum wage to pay for the $107 million for this package. Let me say it again, 39 cents a week. Now, I'm just saying, I'm not sure that you need the illusory savings that are inside the tax package that Senator Boquist and I have been working on to offset 39 cents a week and the incredible benefit that would accrue to low-income folk under this package. And that's just one of the benefits. There are many others. And so I was going to stay quiet also, but I felt a need to bring some facts into the conversation. But I would just recommend this thing is an evolving package. I don't want to fault you for not understanding it or the one in the Reform Committee. They're both still being discussed. But I want to join the senator in saying it's going to take all of us with our shoulders to the wheel to make this one happen. So I must say, I would suggest you go back to your folks and reconsider.
Thank you, Representative Benz. And if I could, we would
very briefly, sir.
We
have
very
lots of
willing,
people behind you
to work with anyone in the legislature for getting these things through, and that includes any discussions if we can.
Thank you, gentlemen. Next up, we have Cesar Lopez, or Lopes, I'm not quite sure, A.J. Zalata, and Kelly Campbell. On deck, we have Chris Mercier, Mike Ragsdale, and Fred Stemler. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Cesar Lopez. I'm a working Oregonian, and I represent the Association of Engineers Employees of Oregon. The association is an independent member-run organization consisted of 1,100 members, including the technical staff of the Oregon Department of Transportation. These are the engineers, planners, environmentalists, project managers, and inspectors that are responsible for delivering projects through planning, design, and construction, including those proposed projects in the transportation funding bill. The association also represents some technical staff at the state parks and forestry departments. 2017 marks the 70th anniversary of the AEE. We want to thank the committee for all the hard work it took over the last year to get this important legislation drafted. We at AEE fully support House Bill 2017. An efficient and well-maintained transportation system is vital to sustaining and improving Oregon's economy now and into the future. The investment represented in this bill is much appreciated and long overdue. American Society of Civil Engineers 2017 Infrastructure Report Card grades our nation infrastructure as a D+. The AEC Oregon section in 2010 graded our state infrastructure at a C. In all cases, one of the recommendations to raise the grade is increase funding levels at all government levels. Additionally, they have calculated that at an average of 42 hours per driver per year are spent in city and traffic congestions, and the average motorist pays $285 per year in vehicle maintenance and fuel costs that can directly attribute to driving on roads that need of repairs. This bill benefits our membership, our consulting partners, contracting community by providing a long-term funding well into the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very well done, sir. Thank you.
Ma'am?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Kelly Campbell. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. We represent more than 2,000 health professionals and public health advocates throughout the state who are committed to tackling the greatest threats to human health and survival, one of which is climate change. As transportation accounts for 37% of Oregon's greenhouse gas emissions, it's essential that a smart and modern transportation bill works to create a healthy and equitable climate future for all of us in Oregon. Investing in public transit, walking, and bicycling has many well-documented benefits for our health and benefits to the environment by reducing pollution associated with driving. The savings and associated health costs will strengthen our state's economy. In contrast, continuing to invest in an auto-centric, fossil fuel-based transportation system brings more air pollution and climate disruption. It contributes to serious health conditions such as asthma, obesity, and heart attacks, along with injuries and death from auto accidents. These health issues affect all Oregonians, but most particularly children, elderly, low-income communities, and communities of color. We strongly support incorporation of the Transportation for Oregon Future Coalition principles into the transportation bill. We appreciate the hard work the committee has already done to incorporate many of these concepts and recommend the following additional changes. Addressing the regressive employee payroll tax funding mechanism for public transit. If this can't be removed entirely, require transit agencies to demonstrate upfront how they will use the funding to mitigate impact on low-income riders. Secondly, following the recommendations of the Street Trust on improvement of safe routes to schools, especially prioritization of Title I schools. Speaking personally, I'm aware of the privilege I have to be able to afford to live in close-in Portland, which allows me to commute easily and safely by bus or by bicycle, and to bicycle a mile with my child to his elementary school using primarily bike route designated streets. The ability to safely and conveniently bike, walk, and use transit should not be a function of economic class. With this bill, you have the ability to address historic transportation inequities by prioritizing funding for low-income communities to ensure that all Oregonians, all families in Oregon, have the access to safe, healthy, and affordable transportation options that I do. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Welcome, sir.
I'm Dr. Zalata from Portland, Oregon, a physician, and was previous committee member and chair of the Bike and Pedestrian Advisory Committee to ODOT for about 8 years and chair for a couple of years. My concern is very specific and very global. The first specific concern is the safe routes to school portion of the bill. There's a 40% contribution request from communities in order to participate in receiving those funds. When we looked at the STIP, when we looked at the Connect Oregon, when we looked at the 1% money that comes into the bike pedestrian coffers, We saw that small communities around Oregon had a difficult time even having landscape architecture drawings for the runoff of water on streets. They don't have the means to do the very sophisticated things, let alone have the higher bar of 40%. So I would request that you consider reducing that to 10 to 15, or better yet, allowing the committees adjudicating the particular grants that they're getting, let those adjudication folks decide the high bar or the low bar or whatever bar. The second thing is the congestion issues. I would love to see congestion taxing. I served on a committee that was Senate Bill 1059 in the 2007-08 to Galaxy a way ago, and the Origo or the Origo program was fascinating in that there was an ability to tax individual people getting on during congestion hours. That platform, to use Uber's definition, is available, and it could be made actual in the next decade, the next two decades. One of the things is the behavior of drivers that we all see, where a person enters and exits, or an entrance onto the highway, and then gets off at the next exit after having moved to the fast lane, the middle lane, and then back to the exit. That makes congestion in that behavior. You could tax that person. I want to thank you for considering that, those two issues.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate
very much,
the
sir.
Daunting task. Good luck.
And the Orgo program is alive and well. It's still operating.
Yes.
And in the next decade, it remains part of our future plans. Questions for this panel?
No.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Chris Mercier, Mike Ragsdale, and Fred Stemmler. On deck, Darren Glebe, Blaine Pickett, and Nancy Crumpacker. Welcome.
Thank you.
Please just go ahead and begin.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Fred Stemmler. I'm a resident of Yamhill County and general manager of Recology Western Oregon. I'll start actually by just saying thank you for everything that you're doing, hearing the scope, the testimony, and interest. It's a big project, and I very much appreciate everything that you're doing with it. So we're in favor of the package. The only thing that I would add is a resident of Yamhill County and an operator of a garbage recycling and compost collection company that operates in Clatsop County, Polk County, but in this instance, the most affected are Tillamook and Yamhill County, is that we're moving product from both the coastal area as well as in Yamhill County that passes through the Dundee-Newburgh bypass area. And under its current construction area, the J-hook as well as the Winooski exit both pose potential congestion issues that I think could lead to major issues, not only to my business, but to the commercial industries that pass from the coast all the way into the Portland area. When it comes to recycling markets, virtually all of the processors are in the Portland area, and so all product needs to transit through this area, and the longer the transit takes, the harder that it takes it, is the more cost in it, and that actually creates a disincentive to recycling. So I would just ask for additional consideration for funding to complete that if possible. I understand that resources are finite, and again, I very much appreciate everything that you're doing. And that's the extent of my comments. I'd be happy to answer our questions.
Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, or evening, I think is more appropriate. My name is Chris Mercier. I'd like to thank you all for the chance to speak before you. I'm a tribal council member for the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. I'm also the tribal delegate to the Mid-Willamette Area Commission on Transportation. We recognize that there are many needs identified across the state and appreciate the committee's effort to tackle the biggest one, congestion in the Portland metro area. The package you have put together takes important steps to address projects outside the metro area, including the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, and we are grateful. We would ask that you move swiftly on the metro projects, allow other regions to take steps necessary in the near future to move their priority projects forward, and not miss critical opportunities like federal funding. This is the key issue for the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, and we just want to underscore that as much as possible. Tribes and local communities have really shown a strong willingness to be collaborative, resourceful, and creative in getting the Newburgh-Dundee bypass project this far. We have invested $4 million into phase one as part of the local match, and we look forward to continuing this strong partnership along with the state to keep the momentum going and move forward to phase two. As you know, the Grand Ronde Tribe and our Spirit Mountain Casino is facing competition due to the opening of the Cowlitz Casino north of Portland in Vancouver, Washington. It is important for us in this newly competitive environment to continue to have safe and efficient transportation options for our employees, customers, and all Oregonians who wish to travel to the coast, the reservation, or Spirit Mountain Casino. Oregon is truly unique when it comes to the relationship between the state and the tribes. Together, we've done amazing things, from Governor Attia and the creation of the Commission on Indian Services and the passage of Senate Bill 770, which put into statute the government-to-government relationship. We should all be proud as Oregonians of the work done to solidify a strong bond between the state and tribes. This is another example of the collaboration that continues to make Oregon a leader in state-tribal relations. The Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde urges your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome, sir.
Chairs, members of the committee, I'm Mike Ragsdale. I'm a resident of Dundee, and I'm a member of the Yamhill County Parkway Committee. Mr. Mercier mentioned the criticality of federal funding, and I want to talk a little bit about that as it relates to Newburgh-Dundee bypass. We're not in an MPO situation where we can raise a lot of local money. We are going to need to be able to access the federal funds that are going to be available, continue to be available under the FAST Act or the Tiger Grants. We fortunately have a federal designation of a project of national significance, which gives us an edge over all the other competitors in the country. And what we need to be able to get there is shovel ready. And we don't have the resources at the moment to be shovel ready, and we need your help. We need to be able to make sure that the language in the bill facilitates the capability of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and others to get design, right-of-way acquisition, and engineering. There's mention of design in the bill, but we are not shovel-ready, which is the criteria for being able to apply for the federal funds, unless we have design, right-of-way, and engineering. So anything that can happen in the bill that would give us a pathway to be able to get that accomplished is extremely critical to the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. Now, the situation is right now we have – some people think that the groundbreaking on phase one of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass will mean completion, and it won't. This design for the project is in increments, and we're able to get, thanks to the legislature, funding for phase one increment, but it will break. It has a life certain. And if we can't move forward with phase two before that investment breaks, we've got a serious, serious problem. And I think most of you know about how that project is going to break. So, again, we're asking you, we support the package. We're glad you're where you are. But we ask you to help us get a clear path to shovel ready.
Senator Johnson.
Two questions. One of them, when you use the nomenclature, the project breaks, some of us don't understand what that means.
I guess I'm a little too close to it. There are two components of the phase one bypass that the engineering analysis, the studies show that they've probably got a life capacity of less than 10 years. Some people say they've got a life capacity of 10 months, and that's the interchange at Springbrook Road and Highway 99, where you come off Rex Hill and Highway 99 goes on Springbrook Road to get down to the bypass. And the other end is what's called the Fishhook and Dundee, where there's a temporary facility that brings the traffic into a fishhook kind of configuration. The engineering studies that have been conducted indicate that the carrying capacity of those two facilities will not be long lived. They need to have the balance of the bypass constructed to work.
My other question is more personal. If memory serves me, are you not the Mike Ragsdale who served in the legislature as well?
Yes, Senator, I did have the pleasure of serving with your father.
That's what I thought. Thank you. Welcome home.
Vice Chair Benz.
Oh, thank you. And I just wanted to thank the Confederated Tribes for their contribution to what I think was the project we did some years ago for the bypass. I believe that is consistent with what actually happened in Bend, although I just heard about it from a former chair of the OTC. But I think it's a construct that we're going to have to be thinking more of in the future, which is to – because in Bend, when they did the parkway, it was – constructed with folks who knew that if it was built, their land would be worth far more money. And partnerships were put together, and I think the individuals actually built the thing and then traded it out with the state in return for land use planning relaxation. And that kind of concept is one that might work for you guys, and I think one that we'll be looking at when it comes to such things as Powell Boulevard, where we try to put together all the pieces that Senator Johnson mentioned last night.
But to me, this gets to the question that I would like to ask the three of you, and that is, if you were asked to support tolling to pay for the Dundee bypass, would you do so?
I'd be happy to answer that question. For those of you that are not familiar with it, the tolling legislation that exists, that was passed by the Oregon Legislature, exists because of, at the request of the Yamhill County Parkway Committee a number of years ago to assist in building this bypass. Okay. And we, the state contractor, Macquarie, spent millions, Macquarie out of Australia, spent millions of dollars analyzing the capability of building a tolling project and determined that it was not feasible. And the reason it was not feasible is in order to do the tolling, since this facility will run parallel to the existing Highway 99, once you put a toll on the bypass that's large enough to make any fiscal impact, people will opt to drive on 99. And you won't get any particular gain. The analysis showed that tolling on this particular project, because of that configuration, would not work, and Macquarie pulled from the project.
A follow-up. Yeah, it's been my experience that almost everything that Macquarie looked at resulted in the same outcome. And much of that has to do when I served it way too long on the Public Infrastructure Commission. We learned that the public-private partnership model required tolls that returned a great deal of money to the investors. So I would suggest that the P3 approach may not work, but a public one might. Depends entirely upon the nature of the financing utilized in funding the project. So because you can get a far lower cost if it gets way too involved. The question is, forget Macquarie, what would your population say?
Well, when it was proposed that there would be a toll on the bypass, and the analysis was that it would not relieve the traffic in the local communities, the local communities went nuts. And I can vouch for that because at the time, my wife was the mayor of the city of Dundee. And I can tell you that her constituents and Mayor Andrews' constituents are sitting in the back went crazy when they heard that proposal.
Then follow up, and forgive me for taking so much time. I'll just suggest that unless people can figure out how to overcome that kind of a local difficulty and figure out how to get more site-specific funding for the projects, you're going to be waiting in traffic a very long time in a lot of places in Oregon, including Newburgh, Dundee. Just saying.
Further questions?
And the term congestion pricing versus tolling may be an issue here as well.
Yeah.
That might want to be considered. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Let's see. Next we have up Darren Glebe, Blaine Pickett, Nancy Krumpacker on deck, Pam Treese, Ralph Saperstein, and Mike, it looks like Kingzella. Good evening.
Hi. Co-chairs and committee members, my name's Dr. Nancy Krumpacker. I'm a retired oncologist from Portland. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the hard work you've put in. I still think we need to address the transportation inequities that place the burden on low-income communities by providing safe walking and biking opportunities and safer air to breathe. Motor vehicles emit benzene, nitrogen oxides, and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which I'm going to call PAHs. Exposed women to benzene have reproductive abnormalities, and occupationally exposed humans develop leukemia. Therefore, the EPA and World Health Organization classify benzene as a human carcinogen. But many PAHs are damaging to human DNA and also are carcinogenic. Cancers from PAHs occur predominantly in the lung and skin. Nitrogen oxides contribute to ground-level ozone, a component of urban smog. Repeated exposure to ozone can cause permanent damage to the lungs, especially in children. Exposure can aggravate chronic lung and heart diseases and reduce the ability to fight infections. So Oregon needs to do everything possible to get people out of their gasoline powered cars as soon as possible. Oregon needs to provide incentives for purchasing electric vehicles, and we need to remove the excise tax on bicycles. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, ma'am. I have to tell you, I grew up with a family of crumb packers. You're the only one I've ever met. So it's a pleasure to have you here tonight.
I'm from Kansas. There's some Oregon crumb packers.
There are. It's not a common name.
And it's probably why that name.
Not a common name. Thank you. Please.
Co-Chair McEwen, Co-Chair Beyer, committee members. My name is Blaine Pickett. I'm one of the owners of Piccadilly Cycles down in Ashland. I really like to thank all the committee members for this huge undertaking that you've committed to, and I'm sure it is you've time away from your families, and I would like to thank you. I fully understand the need to update and improve funding for Oregon's transportation infrastructure. However, I don't feel the bicycle excise tax is equitable among all bicycle users and purchasers. The bicycle excise tax, as written, would basically impact independent bicycle dealers, IBDs. What turns out in the bicycle industry, roughly 15% of bicycle units sold are over $500 and sold through independent bicycle dealers. The remaining 85% are very low price, sold through department stores, chain toy stores, that sort of thing. And so what would happen is the bicycle shop owners, their sales would end up covering a lot of the funds raised. But there's also, my second point is, the internet, bicycle shops have tried to compete as well as they can with the internet sellers that are in other states. And so, you know, it would be unlikely that someone would buy a $500 bike because of a $15, you know, fee. But if bicycles get into the $2,000 or $3,000 range, then you're talking $60 or $90 or more. And so it would be could be cost effective for people to shop out of state, where they also could get free shipping, pay no sales tax, and also avoid the excise tax on bicycles. And I also think the funds raised from the bicycle excise tax would not be enough to significantly improve bicycle infrastructure. And I'm out of time, so I want to thank you all.
Please feel free to submit written testimony.
I do have written testimony.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Yes.
How do you feel about the vehicle excise tax and its effect on auto dealers?
You know, I was reading over that, and I think, and I added it up for, say, a $30,000 car. And for me personally, I don't think it was enough to persuade me from, obviously, I'm going to need a car. I'm a bicycle rider, but I also have a car. And so that would be something that I know auto dealerships have low margins. And so, but I'm not, I think, able to answer that from a business standpoint. But I think from a personal standpoint, I think I wouldn't mind that. And I think I've always thought the gas tax was a very equitable way to raise money. And I would actually like to see that raise as a possibility of raising funds.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Just really quick, thanks.
Representative Olson.
So, Blaine, what's your thoughts on if we were to drop that rate of $500 down to, say, $250?
What I would actually like to see, and I have no problem, and I don't think any cyclists really have a problem raising money for infrastructure, what I would like to see is maybe a flat fee on all bicycles sold. But that flat fee, maybe $10, or, you know, so if you're buying a $100 bike from Walmart, and that was the thing, it would need to cover all retailers. And the problem is, I don't know if the administrative costs from someone that's selling a bike, you know, in New England, and they're selling it to Oregon, I don't know if the administrative costs could be so great that doesn't provide a benefit. But I would really like to see a small flat fee, but on everything. So even, you know, bicycles that are $100, someone pays $5. And there could always be a sliding scale. You know, up to 1,000, it's $5 or $10, and then above that, it's something else. So I honestly don't think cyclists would mind paying if they could see benefit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. My name is Darren Glebe. I'm here representing Operating Engineers, Local 701. I first thank you for allowing me to speak with you. We fully support the transportation package. It's critical in our industry. Construction, as former building trades people have said already, for us it's critical. I sit on negotiating teams, negotiating with our contractors, and though I represent 3,400 members on the union side, it benefits people all across Oregon, not just union contractors and workers. I sit and talk with our contractors, and they struggle because there isn't the transportation money out there for these highway jobs, which supplies family wage jobs, not only just food on the table, but shoes on their feet, electricity, on top of the health care for their families. And these transportation jobs provide that. It's huge for us. We see it every day. I talk to guys on the jobs, as the building trades folks mentioned. They struggle with the traffic funnels that we have in Portland, Columbia River Crossing being one of them, a huge one, you know, taking 2 hours to get home across the bridge, and it's just a few miles. It's terrible. So the monies that this provides, if that project would come through, and all others as well. My hat's off to you. This is a huge undertaking. Not everybody can be happy with these packages you put together. So I'm well aware of what you're going through in a smaller, probably a lot smaller size. So with that, we are in full support of this transportation package, and I just wish you luck, and hope that we can get through it.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for being here this evening.
Thank you.
Next up we have Patrice, Ralph Saperstein, and Mike Kingzella, please. And on deck, Fran Warren, Dale, looks like Hadrick, and Molly Walker. Good evening.
Thank you, co-chairs, co-vice chairs, and members. My name is Mike Kingzella, and I'm the executive director of Oregon Locus, and testifying this evening in support of House Bill 2017. Oregon Locus is the first statewide affiliate of Smart Growth America's Coalition of Responsible Real Estate Developers and Investors. Our organization is largely made up of transit-oriented and infill developers who are deeply passionate about advancing the principles of smart growth in their communities. We support a variety of innovative public policy solutions that address our region's housing and land use needs through a lens of economic, social, and environmental sustainability. And we support House Bill 2017 for its comprehensive, innovative, and thoughtful approach to our transportation system needs. Transit needs dense walkable housing, and dense walkable housing needs transit. This is true in big cities as it is in small towns. The investment in transit in House Bill 2017 will be a game changer for the growth that is coming to communities across the state. The installation of sewer systems, new water facilities, and other infrastructure is much more expensive than simply leveraging what has already been built. Relative to walkable, dense development, congestion is also important to address in many ways, and House Bill 2017 invests not only in transit, but also bike and pedestrian facilities, as well as bottlenecks of statewide importance. If congestion is not addressed, people will push to live further and further out, causing more pressure on existing infrastructure and urban growth boundaries. In addition to transit and congestion investments, the transportation package provides stable, new funding for commuter bike and pedestrian trails, as well as safe routes to schools. These investments are also vital in achieving more housing that is attainable. Transportation costs are second to housing costs for many Oregonians, and having alternatives to driving and getting to work and to school is critically important. I appreciate the effort to address low-income needs through lower transit fares and encourage that. And in the same vein, Title I schools should be prioritized for safe route to school investments. Oregon Locus supports House Bill 2017 and appreciates all of your hard good work on this critically important transportation package. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Ralph.
Co-chairs McCune and Beyer, I'm Ralph Zapperstein, and I'm appearing before you tonight representing the Kosciuszko Shippers Coalition, and it is with much trepidation that I'm sitting here. I've been watching the hearings, but the goal of the coalition is to provide safe and efficient rail service for wood product and other manufacturers on the South Coast in Coos and Douglas counties. Our facilities have benefited from Connect Oregon. Connect Oregon has helped us, especially in 2007 when our short line, the Central Oregon and Pacific Railroad, just abruptly stopped service. Railroads are critical for our transportation needs, and we think that the businesses benefit from that. And when they benefit, they employ family wage jobs, and those folks pay income tax that helps the general fund. So in that regard, we would like to see the Connect Oregon match for small communities and railroads go back, maintain the 30%. And we think, as I said, that helps the economy by providing good jobs. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
That's easy
one. Senator Johnson, I think we have a clarification to make. Yeah.
Go ahead. Please, make your clarification.
If there was a mistake in the bill, we need to correct it. But the change in the Connect Oregon program was only applicable to Class 1 rail lines at a 50% match. Everything else was at 30%. And if that's in error, we need to take a look at that.
Write it down, Patrick.
Well, good.
Taken care of.
I don't know what I was worried about.
We left Connect Oregon alone in that regard, except for the Class 1s, and that's why you've heard some comment about that this evening. There was some trepidation about that, but it should not. Anyway, hopefully that eases your mind.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Ma'am?
But she's still going to ask a question.
That was my point. That was my point.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Pam Treese. I'm the Executive Director of Westside Economic Alliance. Thank you, co-chairs, Senator Beyer, and Representative McCowan, and the members of the committee.
Ma'am, it's McCowan, but you get a pass. It happens all the time. It's okay. No worries.
Thinking about someone in our area.
I'm just trying to prevent Senator Beyer from getting it in his brain backwards. That's all. We've been working on him for a while now.
McCowan.
Thank you.
I apologize. And I don't even want to tell you who I was thinking about when I said that.
Rob McEwen, if it comes to mind, it works.
There you go. I remember that. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm here as a representative from Westside Economic Alliance to support the package. I want you to know that first and foremost. Secondly, I want to commend you for the work that you've done in preparing the package. I participated in the vision panel. We've had representatives from your committee at our transportation committee, and we really support the process that you've gone through to come to the components of the package. We appreciate the design and support the comprehensive transportation package that includes funding for congestion relief, especially for the three principal bottlenecks in the metro region, the Rose Corridor, I-205 at the Abernathy Bridge, and Highway 217. The stable funding for transit to expand service across Oregon, stable funding for Connect Oregon that includes investments for rail, transit, bike, ped, marine, and airports, and also the solid oversight for the use of the funds and the accountability of those funds. It should be no surprise to anyone the critical nature for transportation investment in our region. We have key freight corridors throughout this region that demand investment as a statewide system. As many of you are aware, WEA administered the Washington County Freight Study earlier this year. We learned many things, but key learnings include, in a trade-dependent state, Washington County is the economic engine. As a result, our county is highly freight-dependent. Limited and constrained access in and out of the county is a regional and statewide freight issue. Delay and reliability within the county are also major concerns. And lastly, congestion represents a significant cost to all businesses. Again, I want to stress that the three bottlenecks are critical and require investment an investment commitment as a system. It's important to us that you see it in that regard and include all at the same time. On a final note, I would like to underscore the significance of the willingness of the region to have a higher tax and fee structure to pay for half of the bottlenecks. That's unprecedented, and we support that, and I want you to know that, once again, we support this bill, and we thank you for the work that you've done.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? All right. Thank you so much for coming.
I do.
Oh, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Ms. Treece, for coming down. I know your roster, and it's a powerhouse roster of companies on the west side. Not only as an association, but individual members. If the package moves forward in some semblance of where it is now, will they individually come out and publicly support it?
I believe the answer to that is yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Fran Warren, Dale, looks like Hadrick, and Molly Walker, please, on deck. We have MARJA, Marja Byers, Brad Perkins, and Dan Smith.
Hi, everybody. My name is Fran Warren, and I'm representing the 175th Neighborhood Association in Alloa and Beaverton. And I'm here to explain why the transportation needs of Washington County are unique. It's due to the exponential growth, and to piggyback off of the Western Economic Alliance, Transportation Futures Study in Washington County, which you funded, just recently did a phone survey, and they found that overwhelmingly the residents of Washington County are willing to pay additional taxes to improve the transportation. It was an amazing surprise to them how much people really are willing to go ahead and do that. They would be in favor of this bill. That was not on the phone survey of the bill itself, but they were, Washington County residents are willing to pay. We've been communicating to you, members of the committee, about the packet, about the two-bedroom communities, South Cooper Mountain and River Terrace, which comprise a group of homes that are comparable to adding the population of Coos Bay or the Dalles to the one-half mile 175th and Shoals Ferry current gridlock. And another 8,000 homes are being built less than 4 miles away in South Hillsborough. That's comparable to adding the population of Forest Grove to the city of Hillsborough. And there is no north-south transportation corridor for this part of Washington County to connect these communities to jobs. We need a safe all-weather route to West. I get really emotional about it. I'm passionate. There's no mass transportation hub within walking distance, so people can't walk to those buses. World Wildlife Foundation magazine of summer 2017 states that 76% of Americans drive to work solo, 9% carpool, 5% take public transportation, and just 0.6% bicycle to work. In Washington County, with its half million, million people, it's not yet urbanized, and the bicycling commute model truly works well only in an urban environment. WWF states that in major metropolitan areas in heavy rush hour traffic, even with fewer cars and more efficient cars, automobile emissions are actually on the rise due to the congestion. So I'm reminding this panel that while we need to improve public transit, we also need to improve mobility for the bulk of the workers, which is and will be for a long time on the roads and in their cars. We need to help the farm-to-market trucks so they are not stuck in traffic behind the commuters and who are late for work. The main message here is we need a safe all-weather car, bus, and truck route in the west side of Washington County.
Thank you, and we do appreciate that you care. Welcome, sir.
Hi. For the record, my name is Dale Hendrick. Sorry about my scribbles.
No problem.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, thanks for giving us the opportunity to come and speak. So I grew up here in Salem, actually just 15 minutes down State Street, outside of the city technically. And as I grew up, there were no public transit that came out to our house. There were no bike lanes on those roads that came out towards our house. And when I got old enough to be more independent, I was still having to rely on rides from parents and friends that lived in the area. And that oftentimes left me sitting outside of schools or outside of businesses for an hour, sometimes more, waiting for rides, while my single mom, who worked multiple jobs, found a way to get me home. And still to this day, while public transit has expanded along with the city boundaries of Salem, it still is not coming out to where I live. And I think it's really important that we increase the safe and reliable modes of transportation for everybody, you know, whether they're kids, whether they're folks with disabilities, older folks. Just because growing up with that experience, I quickly learned that not having a car is a really big problem. My first job I lost because I didn't have a reliable mode of transport. And then I just wanted to bring up one more thing, a Bray's paradox, which is a traffic principle that when you add a lane onto a road, the amount of drivers and amount of use that highway gets increases. And it's been proven multiple times, and I would just please ask that this committee continue to be standing so that you can continue to address not only the environmental concerns we have, but also the fact that we need a more widespread transportation system that includes smaller towns and folks like myself that live outside of the city.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Hi. Hello, Chair McEwen and committee members. My name is Molly Walker. I am a student at Portland Community College, and I hold the student seat on our PCC Board of Directors. I am also a constituent of Senator Taylor. I'm here tonight to testify on the transportation package that will play a pivotal role in the lives of students at community colleges around the state. Affordability at PCC doesn't simply mean tuition or financial aid. Community colleges know that our students are one flat tire, one sick child, one shift change away from missing class or even failing out. To give you a sense of my peers at PCC, over 50% of the students qualify for the maximum Pell Grant. We care very deeply about keeping tuition prices low. Each year, PCC uses $1.3 million of transportation fees to supplement the TriMet bus passes to all our PCC classes because we know how important it is to support our students of all corners of our region obtain an education. We are asking you to make significant transportation investments so we can get more students to school from all far-reaching communities and in a timely way that allows students to keep their jobs and finish their degrees. Personally, I only ride public transportation. Like many students, I don't have a car. Since I work with other student leaders at all four campuses, I want you to know that it takes over an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, one way to get to PCC Rock Creek from downtown. Available hours also concern us. Students often study late, so for those of us who have to transfer buses, that means leaving study groups and missing valuable time that can impact our grades. As a homegrown Oregonian, I believe deeply in providing transportation options that remove individual car users from the road, lessening traffic, promoting environmentalism, and helping those like me who rely on public transportation for my livelihood and my education. Past my own experience, I want you to consider some very true challenges for students at community colleges. For example, if you utilize SNAP benefits and go to school at PCC Rock Creek out in Washington County, it might take you a 20 to 30 minute bus ride to get anywhere where you can use your EBT card to get lunch. If a student is out at Sylvania and misses a bus to go pick up a kid at childcare, you may be charged by the minute for a late fee. This is what we mean by one sick kid, one missed bus away from dropping out. At PCC, we work hard to retain our students and ensure everyone gets to graduate. Your work on this transportation package is imperative to the lives of Oregonians like me. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. Questions? All right. Thank you for traveling here. Next we have Marja Byers, Brad Perkins, and Dan Smith, please. And I believe we'll need one extra chair.
I thought
you said there was somebody coming in. Okay. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Chair McEwen, Chair Beyer, who stepped out, and the other members of the committee. My name is Daniel Smith. I'm a resident of Yamhill County, a small farm owner, and a state worker, and a proud member of SEIU. I'd like to thank the committee for completing the work that was necessary to prepare a transportation package. I am personally gratified to see that public transit, bicycling, and other alternative forms of transportation are receiving additional attention. I know that highway improvements are tremendously important, especially in the Portland area where the majority of this package will be spent, because corporations need to move their goods and services. They need to have their delivery vans and their semis travel quickly through the city and not be caught in the congestion so that they can make greater profits. I have grave concerns about the funding for this package because it is regressive and has been noted by business owners, bicycle shops, car dealerships. The cost of the excise tax will be passed on to consumers. Some estimates place 90% of the total cost as to being placed on Oregonians, on working Oregonians, and only 10% being picked up by corporations. I find that to be as uncomfortable as many other things in this state and onerous for the vast majority of people who live in this state. I fear that if this transportation package were put before the voters, they would treat it as they do every other tax, and it would not pass. I stand with Steve Demarest and say that the revenue package and the transportation package must be tied together. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Tonight, you've been sitting in the room, and I think you've heard from many of your union brothers who support this package. Are you willing to break solidarity with these other working Oregonians? And just as you said, if it goes to the voters, it'll fail, and have your union refer it to the voters?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I have heard some unions speak in favor of this package because it directly benefits them. I don't believe that they are considering the full measure of this transportation package and the tremendous detrimental effect it will have upon the poorest Oregonians. 39 cents a week is a lot of money to somebody who can't afford to buy a 250 latte every day. It's a lot of money for somebody who is scraping to get by. And we know that other services provided to these people are going to be cut. You talk about me collapsing or SEIU collapsing this deal. I would suggest that if it were a good deal, it wouldn't collapse if put in front of the voters. Have I answered your question, or would you like me to say more?
I'm perfectly.
I have a follow-up.
Senator.
So explain to me the difference between a sales tax, which is a gross receipts tax, which is Measure 97, which failed miserably, and the excise tax. They're both, as you point out, they're very, very close to being sales tax, technically slightly different. But, you know, one rate is a half a percent, and then the other rate that is being proposed, which I believe your union supports, is anywhere from just slightly under 1% down to a quarter percent. So what's the difference in the regressiveness and the two of those in your mind?
A corporate activity, excuse me, Chair McEwen. A corporate activities tax puts taxes upon the corporations that are doing business in Oregon based upon their sales in Oregon. Even if they're an out-of-state corporation that has been benefiting by the incredibly beneficial tax package here in Oregon, taxes that they pay in other states without blinking an eye, without pulling their business, without in any way damaging the citizens of the state. And yet, the comparison in the transportation package is that the majority of the money raised for this package will be coming directly from the citizens of Oregon. Again, conservatively, 90% of the total $5 billion. At the same time that their services are being cut and they're not receiving the benefits from the state that they have a right to expect. Now, the transportation package is absolutely necessary, but changing the revenue structure in Oregon is just as necessary and has been for quite some time. That's why I see these things as linked.
Thank you. I appreciate the answer.
Sir, welcome.
Good evening. As public representatives, we appreciate your service. First of all, I'd like to say I am in support of the gas.
Sir, we'll need your name for the record, please.
Brad Perkins, Cascadia High Speed Rail.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to say I'm in support of the bicycle tax for off-street and off-road trails. It's vital that we have a higher level of understanding as to safety, as to how do people get around on bikes and off the street, on the trails is the best. Also support the funding of reliable, frequent, and carbon-reducing inner-city rail service that couples as a commuter rail corridor between Eugene, Oregon, and Vancouver, B.C. This is Cascadia High-Speed Rail Concept Plan, which has been taken 10 years to plan and engineer. An EIS study is still needed next, but no money is suggested in the proposed transportation package for fast passenger rail service. And yet the Washington State Legislature and government have recently approved $300,000 to fund a feasibility study for high-speed rail between Seattle, Washington, and Vancouver, B.C., which is very encouraging. As representatives of the public, we want to make sure that the planned $8.4 billion for transportation projects moves people and freight efficiently and with minimum congestion. To accomplish this goal, the public representatives must be open to proven transportation alternatives in Northwest corridors that take advantage of existing and public corridors that enhance and do not encumber other travel modes. Representatives must also recognize opportunities for private sector investment, economic development, long-term job creation, and tax revenue generation. One of the major problems in developing innovative plans by transportation planners at ODOT, Metro, and TriMet, and PBOT is that they stick within their limits of their project scope and known transportation mode and do not study existing technology corridors that can move people three times as fast and three times the amount of capacity as compared to TriMet's MAX. In the metro region of Portland, transportation planners are now conducting a third environmental impact statement in the I-5 corridor. The proposed Southwest Corridor plan will fail to reduce I-5 traffic congestion, just as the CRC, the passenger rail plan, and Rolls Corridor interchange plan will fail to do as well.
Why pay billions of dollars? If you have written testimony, sir, you can submit it, but I'll need you to wrap up really soon, please.
Oh, okay. To finish off, why pay billions of dollars in Band-Aid improvements to I-5 corridor when less money can be spent on a new corridor system with the highest speed capacity that will attract private investment, tremendous economic development, and tax revenue at the station hubs? And I'll leave this with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
But we're welcome to submit your written testimony.
Yep.
Ms. Byers, welcome to our committee this evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Chair McEwen and committee members. My name is Marge Byers. I am a Salem resident, and I am transit dependent, as is my husband and our 28-year-old autistic son, which is a real challenge in the Salem area since we have no weekend and later evening services. And I am also executive director of Blind Skills, which is a locally based nonprofit that helps people living with vision loss not only in the Mid-Willamette Valley area but all over Oregon as well as many parts of the country. A major part of the conversation in the blind community throughout this country is the need for adequate and accessible transportation. It's one of the biggest key issues, and I'm living it on a daily basis. I want to take this a little bit more personally as far as my experience with transit. I am an experienced rider between the Salem and Portland area, which turned into a huge advantage for me. And fortunately, when I had a medical emergency come up with my vision, I lost the central vision in my right eye, didn't know what was going on. I was lucky. It was a Tuesday. I was able to take the bus into downtown Salem, catch regional transit to Wilsonville, then on up to Portland to get to OHSU and work with the doctors at KCI Institute to save the vision that I do have left in my right eye. If it had been a weekend, I may not have been able to save that vision. Getting up to Portland would have been far more challenging. I was lucky. There is such a huge need in this community for far more than just the blind folks in this community. It is a big community need to be able to have adequate transportation. Thank you for your time.
Ma'am, thank you for being here this evening. Sure. Senator Johnson has a question.
Thank you so much for coming. In your opinion, is 39 cents a week for a minimum wage worker too much to bear for expanded service hours and expanded service territory?
And when you're talking to the blind community, most of us are on very limited incomes. Unemployment is over 80% in the blind community, and everyone that I have talked to about that 39 cents feels it's absolute chump change because it will completely alter our lives.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this panel? All right, thank you for being here this evening. Next up we have Max Muller, Becky Steckler, and it looks like Anna Roth, please. And on deck we have Coon Curley, Janice Thompson, and Alex Phillips. Thank you. Welcome. Who would like to go first?
Sure, I'll go ahead and go first.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Becky Steckler, and I am the program and policy manager of the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. Thank you so much for your time and attention tonight and throughout this whole process. OAPA strongly supports the passage of a comprehensive transportation package that moves the state towards meeting our greenhouse reduction goals, funds pedestrian, bicycle, and transit systems and services, addresses congestion, funds maintenance and preservation, and improves resiliency to seismic events. This bill goes a long way towards doing all of these things. OAPA's testimony covers many issues and asks for clarifications that I'm hoping that you will address in future amendments to the bill. But I wanted to focus tonight on the pedestrian and bicycle facilities and the funding for that. The vast majority of the funding in the bill focuses on moving people and goods in cars and trucks. It's difficult to determine exactly how much is earmarked for pedestrian and bicycle facilities, but we fear that it is not nearly enough. Transportation not only shapes our communities, but it also shapes us. This bill has a serious implications for Oregonians' health and presents an opportunity to do a much better job than we have in the past. Unhealthy behaviors that include a lack of exercise are in part driving a chronic disease epidemic in Oregon.
Thank you.
Over half of Oregonians have at least one kind of chronic disease, such as obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. About 2 weeks ago, I was listening to the radio, and OPB reported that Oregonians spend a staggering $8 billion a year to treat chronic diseases. That's 85% of every health care dollar we spend in the state. Soon, you will have to go and vote on a state budget, and you should ensure that it isn't the lack of investments in transportation doesn't mean that you'll end up spending even more money down the road in healthcare. To give an idea of what the need is, I went and I talked to the city of Tigard. Tigard has decided it wants to become the most walkable community in the Pacific Northwest. They did an analysis and determined how much it would cost to fill the 36-mile gap they have in their pedestrian system and determined it would cost about $120 million. Bicycle and pedestrian facilities often don't get the attention and resources necessary to truly create a multimodal system. But if cities and counties are really going to make progress in this area, the state needs to be an equal partner. Please consider increasing the funding for pedestrian and bicycle facilities and help make the healthy choice the easy choice. Thank you.
And you got lucky. Patrick forgot to turn on the timer, so call it a gift.
There's all this other testimony.
Welcome to our committee.
Question,
Madam Chair.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Chair McKeown. Mm-hmm. This lovely gentleman here.
Yes, he's up next.
From my district.
Hello, my name is Trey Niggeman. I am from Lindbergh Elementary School in Milwaukee. I'm here to tell my story and deliver her 1,000 postcards.
Oh, wonderful.
From neighbors across the state with similar stories. I live more than a quarter of a mile away from my school, and I can't safely walk or bike there. We have to walk in the bike lane because we do not have sidewalks. We see drivers drifting to the bike lane all the time because they're on their cell phones. Drivers also use the bike lane to pass cars turning left into our school. Sometimes they don't even stop for the crossing guard. On foggy, dark mornings, my parents have to drive us the quarter of a mile to school, though, because drivers go way too fast and might not see us. This is really scary, especially when you think about little kids like my brother biking or walking on the same road as these fast, distracted drivers. They put our lives in danger just because they're late for work. Too many kids have to be driven to school. This creates long lines of cars and doesn't give us the time in the morning we need to be ready to learn when we get to school. I feel so much better when I have the chance to be outside before school and get some exercise. On days when we have to drive, I feel foggy and I often daydream because I can't focus. We need a safe route to school. We're not the only ones. Kids all over the state are in the same situation, especially in Title I schools. We need you to help support the policies of House Bill 3230. You can have a big impact on how me, my friends, and kids everywhere can get to school. That's why we're here, right?
Thank you.
We all want safer her streets, and we all want to drive less. Safe routes to school is one of the best ways we can do that. Where it is safe for kids like me and my brother to get to school by walking and biking, our streets are safer for everyone using them. We must make the transportation package better for safe routes to school. We are asking you to remove the 10-year sunset on the program, expand street safety funding to $15 million per year, fund in-classroom education of $6 million per year, include Title I prioritization for street safety projects, create flexibility in local funding match requirement for Title I schools, expand the radius for eligible projects around school to 1 mile. Thank you for your time and commitment to Safe Routes to School.
Thank you very much for being here.
I hope that Senator Taylor has an opportunity to retire before this young man decides to run for the Senate.
I am delighted that you're here. I absolutely agree with you. We have a problem with distracted drivers, and we're passing a bill to try and remedy that as best we can. And as a former crossing guard at my children's elementary school, I absolutely agree with you. And when people were not paying attention to the crossing guard, I used to give them the stink eye.
Did that help?
And often it helped, and they didn't do it again when it was a Tuesday morning and Mrs. McEwen was on duty. So I thank you so much. We clearly understand your passion for this issue. We're delighted you're here, and if you head out right now, you may make it home by bedtime, possibly. Thank you. Any more questions for this panel? Oh, my apologies. You jumped right in and without a timer.
No
problem. You're not going to be so lucky.
No problem. The previous speaker was a tough act to follow.
Absolutely. Don't envy you.
Chair Beyer and Chair McEwen, my name is Max Muller. I am with the Union of Concerned Scientists. I represent our 12,000 members in Oregon, as well as the 567 members of our science network in Oregon. Union of Concerned Scientists is a group that works to bring science to bear on tough environmental issues that we face. We applaud this committee for its hard work to bring such a big bill together on a broad scope of issues, and we especially appreciate the committee's patience and willingness to hold public hearings and allow numerous voices to be heard. As we consider Oregon's transportation future, there really is a lot to consider. And I just want to highlight very simply one key thing that I think is omitted from the bill. Certainly in Oregon, as we look towards the future, we know that we need to increase significantly the amount of people driving electric vehicles in this state. That's necessary to do if we're going to reduce global warming pollution from the transportation sector and meet our state's global warming goals. The best policy to increase the number of people driving electric vehicles is to provide cash-on-the-hood rebates or incentives for people to purchase electric vehicles. In California, 90% of people who have purchased electric vehicles said when polled that the state's rebate program was very important for them to do so. That's why I wanted to echo previous commenters who have urged you to include a rebate program or other incentive for the purchase of electric vehicles, and including the provisions of HB 2704 in this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being here this evening.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here as well. Questions? Yes.
Just a comment.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you for the comment. We're actually trying to figure out a way to do that.
Okay. Good to hear. Thank you.
Next up we have, let's see, where are we? We did this. Kim Curley, Janice Thompson, Alex Phillips, and on deck we have Bobby Muir, Michael Vislick, and Alan Bender.
I guess it's me.
Please.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Senator Beyer and Representative McEwen and the committee. I'm Alex Phillips. I live in Salem in Marion County. I have a 1994 Honda Accord and three bicycles. And as a walker, a cyclist, and a dues-paying member of SEIU, I thank you very much for your work and taking this very seriously, taking transportation in all its facets very seriously. I attended some of your work sessions, and I really appreciated your openness in letting me participate in that. A few comments on the package. After a lot of thinking, I do support the bike tax if it really does generate the money that goes to fund projects out of the road right away. But I would like it if we all spoke the truth about this. It is not about cyclists paying our way. We already do pay our way. Most of us own cars, as you know, but it's also the federal income tax. Part of, since 2008, some of our federal income tax has been going to transportation bills. So we do already pay our way, and with the bike tax, we would just be paying more than everyone else to help improve our state. I was very relieved to learn that the bike ped part of the Connect Oregon is still in Connect Oregon, and I'd urge you to fully fund that to the $15 million that it needs, and also to include the congestion pricing and the tolling in the package. This transportation package that you've all worked so hard on, thank you very much again for your work on that. This transportation package would create choices and freedom and safety for all of our daily travels in Oregon.
Thank you. And I would like to thank you for being one of the rare attendees at the multimodal work group. It was a kind of you to come spend some time with us, and we appreciated your insight.
I learned a lot. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Alex Welcome. Is a transportation nerd.
Yes.
Like I am. A proud transportation nerd.
Good evening, Co-Chairs McEwen and Senator Beyer and committee members. My name is Kim Curley Reynolds, and I live in Bend, Oregon. And as a member of the For Every Kid Coalition, I'm here to thank you as well for all of the work you've put into this. I work in public transit and walking and biking issues, and all of my colleagues have been heralding the values of this package compared to ones in the past. So thank you for all your considerations. I know it's really hard work. So since 2005, I've worked in rural and frontier parts of the state, all on the other side of the mountains where the sun comes out more often. And in these small cities and towns on the east side, people live really far away from where they're going and what they need to get to. And we've got very, very limited public transportation options over there. So getting active transportation into the everyday life of someone who lives in Lakeview is really challenging. So I have a couple of ideas about the package. I really don't know how to pay for it all, and I know you guys don't either, but I want you to hear that removing the 10-year sunset on the Safe Routes to School funding would be really important to me, expanding those infrastructure improvements, but also adding non-infrastructure support for Safe Routes to School. This child who was sitting here just before us can safely walk and bike to school because of these programs, because he knows how to push the button at the pedestrian signal, and he knows where to ride his bike. Even if he's not going to school, even if he's going to soccer practice or down to the friend's house. So it really adds a layer to using the expensive infrastructure that we build the right way. So the other thing I would love to throw in is creating dedicated funding for public transportation. That is a huge, huge issue in these rural parts of the state where you can't go between Le Grand and Joseph on Thursday or Friday. So I'd like to see those things improve.
Thank you for traveling, and you didn't check the 100-mile box, or I would have had you up sooner.
Oh, no problem. I'm staying. So it's
Senator
okay.
Johnson, for 39 cents a week, we can provide transit in Eastern Oregon. Are you supportive of that?
Extremely.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Janice Thompson with the Citizens Oregon Citizens Utility Board. CUB was created by a ballot measure in 1984. To serve as an advocate for residential utility customers. You just heard some testimony earlier about EVs and something to do. My comments tonight are very targeted on something not to do and recommend kind of a deletion of sections 138 and 139 for two reasons. The goal of those sections seem to be to encourage investment by Portland General Electric and Pacific Power in transportation electrification infrastructure, such as electric vehicle charging stations. The catch is that these investments have been occurring for a while, and in fact, the pace was bolstered by a provision in last year's Senate Bill 1547, the Clean Electricity and Coal Transition Act, for both those utilities to work with the PUC and stakeholders to do even more in that arena. So then the other piece of those two sections of this act then kind of introduce a different funding mechanism related to the public purpose charge, which CUB was involved in quite some time ago in establishing, and we have historically and continue to not support diversions of those funds given the system-wide benefits to those utility customers. For example, for every $1 of public purpose money invested in energy efficiency projects, all ratepayers save $3. So it seems like the investments occurring without needing to tap into that source of money is not supported by us because it's working now, and there would be a kind of a robbing Paul to pay Peter or whatever that line is element that just doesn't seem necessary. And in fact, if there's kind of a midstream shift in the funding mechanism, it would be very disruptive to the current discussions underway before the PUC related to the 1547 kind of implementation, that if anything would kind of delay these projects. So would suggest deleting those two sections. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel or comments? All right. Thank you for being here this evening. Next up we have Bobby Muir, Michael Veslick. I'm not going to get that one right, and Alan Bender. On deck, we have Barbara Bennett, Arnold Danich, and Cora Potter, please.
Thank you, co-chairs and commission committee members for this scoping session. My name is Bobby Murr. I've been a TriMet rider for 38 years, and 38 years ago, I got rid of my last car. I have no desire or need for a car at this point. And my ask is, I hope that whoever puts together the funding for this transport package will be very generous with sidewalk funding and EV funding for possible fleet conversions for government agencies and entities. And the generous funding will allow all of you to be leaders in helping us meet our state's greenhouse gas emission reductions and also for greener transportation, and happy riding, walking, and pedaling. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Welcome.
Hi. I am here today as a frequent public transportation user to testify in support of the proposed transportation bill. My name is Michael D. Vecchio. Nobody pronounces my last
name
right.
I'm very sorry.
You're not the only one. And I live in downtown Portland, Oregon, and I'm a student at Portland State University. TriMet, Rose City's public transportation system, includes the Metropolitan Area Express Light Rail, a.k.a. MAX, the Western Express Service Commuter Rail, known as WES, and a highly sophisticated bus system. The Portland Bureau of Transportation owns the Portland Streetcar, which easily gets people around the Portland City Center. TriMet and PBOT, or depending on the state for help. The funding could help hire more employees, such as MACs or WES operators, bus drivers, fare enforcers, which I think is important for safety on TriMet vehicles, or customer service representatives. The transit package would help fund service improvement projects, like fixing the MAX line across the Steel Bridge, or the Southwest Corridor proposed MAX line, which would greatly reduce congestion in the southwest part of the Portland metro area, or the Division Transit Project, which is a bus improvement project that would prevent crowding on buses that go along Division Street. This bill would also help help the city replace old polluting buses with hybrid or electric buses, which have been in the plans for TriMet. Mm-hmm. So the proposed transit package would also benefit Portlanders with a low income. The funding could help TriMet and PBOT run a program where qualified low-income citizens can ride for reduced fare. This would also enable the transit system to start programs that would benefit riders who are seniors or people with disabilities. People depend on public transportation these days. I do not own a car because I live in the Portland City Center, and I use bus and light rail to get anywhere I need to go. Wouldn't it be a blessing if non-Portlanders had the same opportunity? Mm-hmm. Citizens from all over Oregon are announcing that they need public transportation. Wouldn't it be convenient if there could be transportation throughout Oregon so citizens without cars could travel from city to city? I grew up in Pendleton, Oregon, almost no reliable public transportation. It's out in the east side of the state, very rural, and I have to rent a car to go visit my family out there. I spend about $250 each time to go out to Pendleton. It'd be very nice to be able to take a train out to Pendleton, like the Amtrak I know used to go there. And I believe I'm out of time, so thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak, and thank you for your hard work on this.
Thank you for coming down tonight and testifying. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Alan Bender, and I also live downtown. Thank you for including transit in this bill. A few concerns I'd like to point out and like to address some concerns. Encouraging ridership, I believe, would alleviate some congestion downtown. One way I specifically think is important is bringing back Fairless Square. When I first came to Portland, I loved it. That encouraged me to come down to downtown when I was living in North Portland or in Beaverton. And I think that's really important economy-wise as well. I also think that making some MAX and bus lines 24 hours, to run 24 hours, that's very important because we've heard some other people on this panel, they have weird school hours and, you know, things like that. I had a friend that mentioned something that was very interesting that I agree with. His quote is, "I hate paying $5 round trip for a trip downtown. I pay less for parking downtown, so I drive downtown. I wish the base fare was lower." Being low income, I agree with that, even though I don't drive, but that makes perfect logical sense. So I agree with lowering it. Also, low-income riders doesn't equal $100 monthly fare price. I just don't believe that. Portland used to have a reputation for one of the best in public transportation in the country. I see it's declining. However, it does need a reboot. I do agree, however, the employees' tax will help with some of these concerns I have. So thank you. And for seeing that transit will need a refresh. So that's it.
Great. Thank you so much. Questions? All right. Thank you for being here this evening. Next up, we have Barbara Bennett, Arnold, looks like Danich, Cora Potter on deck, Suzanne Harmon or Hannon, Doug Kennard, and Edward LeClaire.
Good evening.
Thank you for being here, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm sorry I have a vocal condition, which
no worries.
Might tell you how important it became for me to come here tonight to speak with you.
Ms. Bennett, I'm sorry, we'll need your name on the record if you don't mind.
Barbara Bennett.
Thank you.
Hillsboro, outside of Portland. I do not have a car. I cannot afford a car. I do not want a car. I travel by walking, by bike, in public transportation, primarily MAX. I pay $28 a month for my monthly pass. I am happy to pay for that, and I'm happy for it to continue to be at that rate. If I thought I could get on MAX and be reasonably safe, like so many, I am still reeling from what's happened. I think a certain amount of funds should go to education in high schools and schools. This is how you protect yourself in public transportation. This is how you behave on transportation. You are polite and you are respectful. And that's all I have to say. And thank you.
Thank you for traveling down here this evening. Yes, sir.
I'm Arnold Panich. I live in Southwest Portland, and I'm a very loyal transit rider. I hope that we'll be able to keep our fares low for aging old guys like me. I just celebrated my 76th birthday, and I've lived in Oregon for 14 years, have never paid for parking in Portland, Oregon. Not in the downtown,
you're a lucky man.
Not at PDX, not at the Moda Center. Never have I paid for parking as a resident of Southwest Portland. I would advocate to you that we keep the commuters off the interstate highways. I don't think the interstate highways are for commuters. I think they ought to be for interstate commerce or for tourism or for people going interstate, not commuters. So I would advocate for increased transit opportunities for people who live a little ways away from the center. For our students, for workers, and for recreation, I highly advocate transit and alternative transit like the Ride Connection, where they have volunteer drivers to take people shopping or for medical appointments and so forth. I send people transit passes when they come to visit me. And except for California, everybody seems to understand that when they get to the airport, they can get to my house with a train and a bus, or from the railroad station with a bus by itself, or for other modes of transportation, they can get to my house from the bus station, railroad station, or from PDX. I would advocate to you that we have an aging system. Our trains are getting older, our buses are getting older, and we're going to need funding for capital improvements. And so if we can do that, to quote someone much higher in power than me, we can make America great again by investing in Made in America goods, which TriMet seems to be able to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, Co-Chair McKeon, Co-Chair Beyer, Senators and Representatives. My name is Cora Potter. I was born and raised in House District 9 and currently reside in House District 46. I'm the Grants and Outreach Manager for Ride Connection, a private nonprofit that provides community-based and door-to-door transportation service options and travel training on public transit throughout the three counties that make up the Portland metropolitan region. We coordinate closely with TriMet and Metro, but regionally the services we provide are unique to our specialized network of transportation partners. I'm here today to applaud your efforts to provide a stable statewide source of funding for improving public transit services. To put it mildly, Portland is suffering growing pains, and the pains are most deeply felt in areas with where people with lower incomes, people who are transit dependent, older adults, and people with disabilities are living. The growth in population means the current levels of coverage service that are available now are inadequate. An expansion of network frequent services is what is required to spatially match the level of transit service to the density of population. An affordable, accessible, high-frequency network of transit is needed outside of our central city core. In addition, the ability to provide more support to make fare prices affordable to people with low and fixed incomes is needed to ensure these investments and service are used to their full potential.
At the same time, we are concerned that without being explicit in the language of House Bill 2017-3, the mechanism of the payroll tax will not provide direction to make funding available for service types that fall outside current transit provision models. We understand that amendments are being worked on, and we look forward to seeing how these develop. In 2015, 16% of Oregonians were over the age of 65. By 2050, this will increase to 23%, and this increase will be even more pronounced in urban areas. In addition, as the number of people with health insurance increases, demand for our service increases even more. In many cases, older adults and people with disabilities can use public transit for most of their trips, but a door-to-door trip is needed to access services on larger medical campuses where the curb next to the bus stop is actually a long walk away. Anyway, to wrap up, I'm here to ask that something be done either to specifically and significantly increase the amount of funding available through the Special Transportation Fund or to provide a way to for the portion of any new revenue for public transit to be made available to community-based door-to-door services. To draw a connection to the payroll tax-based benefit, please consider that without these services, many wage earners will have to use unpaid leave to drive their friends and family members to appointments if they are not available through community-based providers. Thank you so much for your time and attention to finding a way to invest in our transportation system. I came to this career over a decade ago because I wanted to honor my grandfather, who as a civil engineer for the BLM, helped create and invest in the transportation system we're trying to build on today. At the end of his life, while struggling with Parkinson's disease, he would often have to call an ambulance just to go to a routine doctor's appointment. We're ready for a transportation system that will ensure that these situations become the exception, not the norm, and ensure that we're building on, transforming, and improving the strong foundation that Oregonians like my grandfather left in our stewardship.
Ma'am, thank you for being here this evening. We appreciate it. And one of the conversations that continues to come up is medical transit. So we appreciate your interest in this, and thank you for coming to highlight that for us tonight.
Questions or comments?
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Next up we have Suzanne, it looks like Cannon, Douglas Kinnaird, and Edward LeClaire on deck, Mark. Can you read this? It's very faint. Valdez?
Valdez, yes.
Juan Valdez, I'm not sure, it looks like Valdez.
Mark Fitz
and Roger Patterson. I'm sorry, our paper didn't bleed through very well. It's difficult to read. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for being here. Please begin.
I'm Suzanne Cox Hannon, and thank you to the prestigious chair, all the committee members, for the opportunity to speak today. And I am in support of the transportation package for the House Bill 2017. I am a FedEx worker and a frequent rider on TriMet for over 8 years, who has used both rural and urban public transit. I really appreciate all the work that you're doing. You've already heard the very real and very meaningful testimonies from people with specifics on how it benefits pollution, the control of pollution, the medical benefits for human life, the low-income people that are benefiting from it, and the other areas which people have had figures to speak from. I can speak from my personal experience, which ranges from the very best, including a life-changing career improvement happening to me due to TriMet's reliable and far and frequent services that do go late into the AM hours when I need them to work at FedEx. Unfortunately, there are other. I was able to be dropped off right across the street from school. Mm-hmm. I was able to become more responsible way back in the 80s, using park and ride for the first time and getting myself to school that way, saving money. So these are very important ways. But now to look at the worst ways that I've had to experience the TriMet, being a MaxTrain sans security there and experiencing tragic civil unrest, or in a rural town, rather dangerous nighttime abandonment due to limited services and inadequate dissemination of scheduling information. People and transit are important, as you all know. Out-of-towners are enthralled and praiseful regarding TriMet services. I hear this praise of TriMet from them quite often, writing it as often as I do. And now, in order to continue to be that model and to keep smaller cities lively and healthy, more needs to be done. More needs to be accomplished, not less.
Ma'am, I'll have to ask you to wrap up if you don't mind.
Okay. Specifically, the Section 12 amendments that you both have worked into, and I really appreciate all the work that you're doing on it, and thank you for that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you so much for being here tonight. Welcome.
My name is Douglas Kinnaird. I'm here for myself, but in a sense, I represent a number of your constituencies. I semi-retired 10 years ago and moved up to the Puget Sound area, and after 4 years of semi-retirement, decided there was too much retirement, not enough semi, and returned to the Portland area for a couple of reasons. First of all, I wanted to pursue further my career as a specialist in aquatic therapy and rehabilitation, working with people with disabilities and injuries. And second, because of the TriMet system, because I wanted to get rid of my car, which I did when I moved back here in 2010. Since then, I've become, as I say, one of your a representative of many of your constituencies, first of all, with the people that I work with, the people with disabilities, whom I see on the TriMet system all the time. But in any given week, I may ride any one or more of 14 different buses, 4 MAX lines, and the WES, commuter rail. I see people of every age, from toddlers in strollers to older people, elders my age, I'm 76 by the way, pushing their walkers, riding their wheelchairs. I see this very valuable service to the entire community as we speed by the traffic on 26 and 217 going 55 miles an hour while they sit in parking lots, pumping CO2 and carbon monoxide into the air. I'm also a bike rider. I get around by TriMet, by my bike, and I walk. And one of the big problems we have on some of the areas like Beaverton Hillsdale Highway, bike riding is really treacherous. And it's difficult because of the hills to get around other than on the highway. So consideration needs to be made for that. Also on the bus, I notice a lot of potholes. A lot of infrastructure needs rebuilding. So my plea here is to pass this bill and use it to build up our infrastructure, maintain our roads and our bridges, which are in danger of a big earthquake, and to see what we can do to get more cars off the road by filling up those MAX trains and perhaps providing more of them and more bus service.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Edward LeClaire. I live in Portland, Oregon, in Senator Taylor's district. Good evening. I'm here as a parent, as a bike rider, as an Oregonian, and as a member of the Llewellyn Bike Club. It's the public school there in my neighborhood. Both of my boys went there, and we've been working hard to get around vehicle congestion, which I've seen on the very granular level and on the very child level. We've worked hard to get bike trains going, and I've got a lot of insight. I could probably talk to you all for 30 to 40 minutes, and I know I get like only
got
another
two.
Okay. For starters, just so you all could see it, I'd love to invite you to join us on our last bike train this Friday, 7:35 a.m., Southeast 19th and Miller. We'll ride about a mile to the school. In the depths of winter, they were very small. Sometimes it was just me and another family. But the community on a bike is awesome. We get to know each other. You get to talk to other kids. Your kids talk to other kids. It's phenomenal. On the last bike train we did last Friday, the Unipiper joined us. And by the time we got to school, we lost count at 135 people clogging a couple blocks with all the bikes. And the best thing about it, when we got to school, I looked around. I didn't see very many cars. The cars were no longer a problem because so many people were on their bikes. And the solution to congestion is right there, transit and bikes. Thank you kindly.
Oh, thank you for your enthusiasm. We appreciate it very much. Questions for this panel? Senator Taylor, I think you win the prize for the most constituents here tonight.
Yes.
I don't know if you planned that.
Chairman McHugh and I promise I didn't plan any of it, but I have told everyone on the committee that my constituents are very passionate about the transportation package, and here they've come to show it in spades.
Thank you for taking the time to come tonight.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mark Fritz, Valdez, and Roger Patterson, please. And on deck, we're getting close to the end. Paul Herrick, Rita Bauman, and Chris Walker. Good evening. You're very patient people. We appreciate it.
You would have been here earlier, but it took an hour to get from the Moda Center to Wilsonville.
Of course it did.
My name is Mark Fitz. I'm the president of Star Oil, a Portland-based member of the Oregon Fuel Association. We are a statewide trade association of gas, diesel, and biodiesel or biofuel sellers. We support a comprehensive statewide transportation package, especially the greatly needed infrastructure upgrades. But the idea of a local gas tax without a local vote, especially when you consider all the various local, county, city gas taxes that stack up, you will harm and disadvantage Oregon fuel sellers the way that shakes out. To review gas taxes, today we have a 30-cent gas tax in Oregon, an 18-cent federal tax, and in Portland area as much as 13 cents, depending on where you are. Addition of another 14 cents over 10 years, as you have proposed, and a JPAC tax on top of that. You're pushing close to a dollar. Think about that. In an era of declining volumes in gas sales for retail due to EVs, your gas tax proposal will curb revenue collection. We're seeing it with Portland's gas tax, where people, fleets are moving to avoid that Portland and county taxes. Now remember, I make between 2 cents a gallon, about 2 cents a gallon, on a truckload of gasoline delivered inside the city of Portland. They're fighting over pennies. I'm competing on pennies, and the buyers will move because of that, so don't overdo the gas tax. You will hurt the revenue collection. You will also disadvantage local companies that have big investments coming on their underground infrastructure and EPA requirement, you know, to provide retail fuel, often in communities where they really need that for convenience. If a regional tax is essential, there are two ways you can do it. I would recommend, one, eliminate local taxes within the regional jurisdiction for the duration of the tax, if you're doing a JPAC tax. Second way would be to require existing local taxes be diverted to the congestion relief projects to prioritize. Please get this transportation bill passed. Oregon needs it. It is overdue. And in doing so, make the gas taxation more equitable and retain a requirement of local vote for local taxation, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Hello, my name is Robert Patterson, and I am from Portland, Oregon, born and raised. I currently live in Clark County, Vancouver, Washington. I catch the bus and the MAX everywhere I go. I've walked most of my life everywhere. And my question is, why is it that in Portland, Oregon, there's more congestion than in Washington?
Thank you for being here. Did anyone care to take that one on? Senator.
Just so you know, the Seattle metro area and the whole area in 2006, 2007 began a congestion relief and tolling program, and it has been a massive expansion of transit, freeway access, and movement across the almost the entire state. And so the reason Washington has a better system than we do is they have invested in it, and they continue to invest in it, and they invest in it wisely. And we have not done that for 20 years, which is why we're sitting here, and we're thankful that you're sitting there telling us to do something.
Thank you.
Well said. Thank you for coming. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Juan Valdez. I'm here on behalf of my dad and myself, who is an owner, operator, and a truck driver. He has his own trucking company. Traffic is so bad that Portland is a money loser for us. We live in Portland, but he avoids our area because of traffic. I am also against tolls on I-205. It will hurt less, or I guess put simply, poor people, and make traffic on the east side worse. Please make this happen with no tolls. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for coming down to testify tonight. Questions?
Thank you very much.
Anyone? Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Paul Herrick, Rita Bauman, and Chris, it looks like Walter or Walker. Walker. Thank you, sir. And then we have one panel left after this, so y'all know who you are. Good evening.
Thank you.
Please begin.
Hi. I want to thank you, each of you, for your service to the citizens of Oregon and for the hard work you've done on this. And thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Rita Bauman, and I'm a longtime resident of Oregon, currently living in Beaverton. 8 years ago, when I realized that I couldn't drive safely anymore, I sold my car and I started using TriMet. And I have nothing but praise for the TriMet system and the awesome people who make it go. I'm sorry. I'm pretty emotional about this.
Take your time.
You or someone you care about may rely on public transit. But right now, those of us who are elderly and disabled need it. We need it to get food, to get the medical, to get to entertainment. I am very fortunate to live in the TriMet service area, but I want to urge you to consider the needs of those folks who live in the lesser served areas, who have limited or no transit, and give attention to their needs. The bill before you is mind-bogglingly complex, and you know way better than I do the intricacies outlined and addressed in this bill. You live here, you drive our roads, you cross our bridges, and you know what it's like. And you may remember what it used to be like. Years ago when I came to Oregon, I was astonished by how well-maintained the highways, how clean and well-maintained the highways were. As Oregon grows, the issues around transportation become more complex and more pressing. This bill lays the foundation for roads, railways, bridges, bikeways, public transportation, and all the support systems. Please give it your very careful consideration. You've been elected to do a really difficult job. Those of us who voted for you expect you to make the tough and necessary decisions for the good of all Oregonians. And I know that whatever decision you make, you're going to be criticized. So I applaud you for your willingness to consider the good of all citizens in our amazing state. From your position of strength and integrity, please support this bill. It will make a fundamental difference in the quality of life, one Oregonian at a time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Thank you for me being here. My name is Paul Herrick. I'm from Portland.
when you hear what I have to say, you understand my need for transportation. As you can see, I'm in a power wheelchair. I have swivel palsy. My left leg and foot has severe nerve damage, and it goes spastic. And when it happens, I have no control. I have severe nerve damage in both arms and hands. And this hand, when it happens, my whole arm goes numb. I am, as of recently, a cancer survivor. So I'm here to speak for transportation. Without it, I'm stuck. I cannot picture nor afford to call a tow truck everywhere I need to go. So TriMet and TriMet Lyft is very vital in my life, and they are my lifeline. So I need transportation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come down. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Chris Walker. I live in Forest Grove. I represent many of the citizens with disabilities on the Committee on Accessible Transportation of TriMet that advises their board of directors. And I'm just thinking about the amount of time that I spend on the buses and the Lyft system myself. It's very long and very bumpy rides because of the roads and the conditions of our roads. And when you think about the conditions of the roads, you need to think about what it would be like to ride on a bus with a little suspension or just bumpy roads everywhere, and think of yourself in a wheelchair like these two are, and think about being that your lifeline. And also, the time spent on transit, whether it's bus, MAX, or Lyft, is just so hard for people, and there's no way of stopping. And with the growth of the metro area, you know, that's something that you guys need to consider with the roads and how long it takes to get from here to there. So those are just some tips that I experienced and that I just wanted to pass on to you.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come down.
Thanks.
Questions or comments?
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Our last panel. Reached the end. We have Michael Trujillo, Zephyr Moore, and Joe Courtright, please. And I believe we have exhausted our list.
You saved the best for last.
Yeah.
And I might be the one.
Zephyr Moore, Beaverton, Oregon.
Please begin, sir.
Thank you for your efforts. The efficient transportation structure equals save time and cut pollution. I would like to propose ways to cut road wear simply and pay for road repair easily. The easiest way to cut road wear, well, many easy ways. Many people drive studded tires for 5 months of the year. The cab, Broadway cab in Portland, puts studs on November 1st, drives until April 1st. When April 1st, they move the studs from the back tires, the nipples from the back tires, and put them to the front. They put new tires on the back. They've had the worst possible traction for 5 months because on November 1st, when it's 55 degrees, and they get on the road and they go with they're dancing on metal spikes, totally out of control. When it comes to December, when they actually might need studs, they're all nipples and holes. So that's the worst traction. Devours the roads. You've probably seen stud claw marks on the road. Devours the road. I would urge you, in the state of Oregon, that people who buy studded tires must put them on extra wheels. That gives them the flexibility to take the wheels off, or have the wheels in the closet until the day before it snows. Then they put them on the car. That's that one. All tires, rubber tires, have little rubber hairs. The rubber hairs are a residue of manufacturing. They have weight, surface area, and mass, and inertia. Because they're on this, away from the axle, every time the tire goes around, they're moving the speed of the axle plus the cycloid. the surface area disturbs the air. On my car, it's 30 square inches. If all the cars that go through the tunnel in Portland had just 30 square inches of surface junk on their tires, that's an acre of sail area. Well, that costs oxygen fuel. And the weight of the rubber hairs are the same as the tire. How to pay for repairs easily. I am an Amsoil synthetic lubricant dealer. Everybody who uses the car must use oil, synthetic oil, or I have synthetic oil. If they buy the oil through me, the profit goes to nonprofit causes of the buyer's choice, the state, church, school, Audubon, wetland. Do you have any questions? Oh, it's $250 to start an Amsoil, a buying account with Amsoil. It's $2.50 a month. And every month, if you make a purchase, every month the profit would go to the nonprofit cause of your choice, be it the transportation if you'd like.
Great. Sir, thank you very much. We appreciate your effort for being here. Sir?
Oh, excuse me. I forgot my name. Zephyr Moore, Beaverton, Oregon.
Got it. Welcome.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Joe Courtwright, Portland, Oregon. And I want to urge you to strike from the bill the funding for the freeway widening projects in the Portland metropolitan area. Last week, as we all know, the president said that the U.S. is going to pull out of the climate change, Paris climate change accords. Oregon nominally has a goal to reduce greenhouse gases by a mere 10% from their 1990 level. According to your state climate change commission, we're not on track to do that. We're going to lose ground. And spending upwards of $1 billion to widen roads will increase the amount of greenhouse gases emitted in Oregon. It takes us in exactly the opposite direction that we've said we wanted to go. Second thing is, even those three projects and spending upwards of $1 billion on additional freeway capacity will not have a meaningful effect on traffic congestion in the Portland metropolitan area. There's abundant evidence now that when you widen freeways, you simply encourage additional traffic. And by doing so, you increase greenhouse gases, and you can widen freeways essentially without end. Houston's Katy Freeway is 23 lanes wide. After its last widening, it was less than 3 years before its traffic overwhelmed it, and it's now takes 30% longer than before they widened it to 23 lanes. Finally, I want to suggest that you haven't addressed the fundamental problems with ODOT overrunning the cost of its projects. Every one of the major projects that ODOT has undertaken in the last decade has gone over its budgeted amount by 200 to 300%, most notably the Highway 20 project, which ran over by $250 million. The audit that was done didn't address those fundamental problems, and in fact, it helped conceal the scale of those cost overruns and the problems that are at ODOT. And by underfunding, by Matt Garrett's estimate, the amount of the estimated cost of the freeway widening projects in Portland, $750 million of a total price tag that's initially estimated $1 billion, you've set the stage where there are going to be cost overruns. And the problem is, and this has been the recurring problem in transportation finance, is that we've pleaded that we needed to put more money into maintenance. And then on every single project that comes along, we've diverted money to capital construction and then deferred maintenance still further. And what this bill does is it takes us in the wrong direction on global warming and will worsen those problems. So briefly, I have three amendments that I propose to the bill. First, and I've submitted these electronically, but first, delete Section 119 to get rid of the highway projects. If you don't choose to do that, please insert a policy that requires ODOT to bring 100% of Oregon roads up to a state of good repair before investing in any congestion projects so that we're not doing a bait and switch on the maintenance problem. And finally, if you do go ahead and put in upwards of $1 billion for highway projects, I'd suggest that you repeal ORS 468A205, the state's greenhouse gas goals, because you are not serious about trying to do something about climate change.
Great, sir. Thank you. We appreciate you being here. Mr. Trujillo, I believe you are finishing up tonight for us.
All right. Well, thank you. My name is Michael Trujillo, and I'm a resident of Happy Valley, as well as a parent of two young boys. I'm here in support of safe routes to school for my kids to walk and bike on, as well as safe streets for me to be able to drive on. In the past 3 years, there have been over 900 pedestrian deaths all around Oregon. So I'd like for you guys to pass the transportation package, both an increase for safe routes to school funding, And so please vote yes on the package, and thank you for your time. And you guys have a great night.
Thank you. You were great.
Very grateful. Questions for this panel? Thank you. We have one document we want to hand out to the committee. Thank you for being here this evening. We're very grateful for your time.
Why don't I talk about the weight on the road?
They're a pound. A pound.
So I want to give credit to our capable staff who has been receiving written requests, input from our colleagues for the last few days. They have taken that and put it in a form that we would like you to take a look at. This is what we have to date. There may be some more things that are coming in the next day or so. Time is of the essence for anyone that wants to add anything. We will be going over this tomorrow night with some additions that are going to be coming tomorrow, but this is a starting point for the issues that we want to deal with tomorrow when we're looking at the potential changes that we want to make to the current bill. So I believe on that 5 o'clock tomorrow, committee meeting to discuss where we're headed from here. We're adjourned. Thank you.